Chris, welcome to our final day of budget hearings. Also welcome to the Acting National Commissioner, the Acting Head of the DPCA, General Matakata, and also see the Secretary of Police with us and as well as their staff, and also welcome to civil society and the media. Maybe just to recap, we dealt on Tuesday with Program 1. Yesterday we dealt with Programs 2, 3, 4 and 5. And today we're going to deal with the DPCI currently a sub-program. And then right after we dealt with the DPCI, we're going to move to the Secretariat. And then early this afternoon, we will deal with IPET. So, honourable members, that is our program for the day. Then in terms of next week, just to indicate to members, there will be a meeting on Wednesday, not on Tuesday. Wednesday we will look at CIRA, at their plan, and we also deal with some other reports and other administrative issues on Wednesday. Again, our time frame is in the week after that to adopt the report. So again, we also want to ask all departments that still need us to give us other documentation and further information to make sure that we receive it as soon as possible, that we can also include it for purposes of the budget reports. We will then immediately start with this morning's presentation on the DPCI. Maybe just to indicate to the Acting National Commissioner, of course the Acting National Commissioner is welcome to give a broad introduction, but from the Portfolio Committee side, we want a full brief from the Acting Head of the DPCI, and also in terms of the SAPS Act, the Head of the DPCI must give to Parliament a rundown of the budget for the year. So it's important that that briefing is done as in terms of the SAPS Act, and that is by the Acting Head of the DPCI. So let's go to General Mahlani. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to the issues we are here for today. But maybe just before we proceed the delegation, I think I will only talk to the delegation from the DPCI that is here today, the Deputy National Commissioner, Directorate Priority Crime Investigations, who happens to be the acting head of the DPCI. We also have Brigadier Mlaudzi, the spokesperson to the DPCI environment. There is Brigadier Mohajani. You may indicate where you are sitting, colleagues. And Brigadier Mohajani, we also have Kenel Mampani, the finance man in the environment, as well as Kenel Matthews, who is from the MIC of the environment. Chair, we always will respect and implement policies. It is so that the Police Act speaks to the status of the DPCI, that there is direct accounting to the Minister of Police. There is also accounting to the National Commissioner. The National Commissioner remains the accounting officer of the environment. And as correctly indicated, thus far, DPCI remains a sub-program in Program 3, but we deal with it in line with the directives as a separate presentation. So there is a detailed presentation by General Matakata, which will not only be talking to what is in the plan, it is also dealing with other issues that are in there. That part, I think she will run. There is the part which is sectored into the plan. So I'm not sure whether we continue with that presentation as it is in the plan and proceed with the second presentation that is much more detailed by hand.
Yeah, I think maybe, General, let's do the detailed one, and if there's any additions, then I think let's deal with it, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much, General Paslani. General Matakata, you're welcome to go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will go through this presentation as indicated. I'll just run through the scope of the presentation. It will be the introduction, and we'll touch on the DPCI mandate and objectives, the DPCI priorities, and the operational support functions, the overall analysis for the DPCI estimated budget according to the ENE, the expenditure trends and estimates, and the estimated expenditure for the DPCI, economic classification year-on-year, estimated expenditure per economic classification for DPCI, and then components and sections, the breakdown of the budget that is allocated to the components and the sections, as well as the provincial breakdown in terms of the budget allocated, and then the summary that would be the concluding the presentation. In terms of the introduction, on slide 3 is to provide the Portfolio Committee on Police with the DPCI financial information and key performance indicators as aligned to the medium-term strategic framework and the estimate of national expenditure. Then I'll go to the mandate of objectives. The mandate of the DPCI is to prevent, combat, and investigate national priority offenses, in particular serious organized crime, serious commercial crime, and serious corruption. As per the section 17A of the Act defines national priority offenses as organized crime, crime that requires national prevention or investigation, crime that requires specialized skills in the prevention or investigation thereof, as referred to in section 16(1) of the SEPS Act. And the objective is to contribute to the successful prosecution of offenders by investigating, gathering and analyzing evidence. The next slide speaks to the priorities as per the MTSF, which is over 5 periods starting from the financial year 2014-15. I'll read the objective statement is to address serious corruption, where officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption-related cases. And the performance indicator that we measured on is the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for fraud and corruption by individuals within the JCPS cluster measured against the total fraud and corruption cases. And if you look at the performance over the years, and I would rather go to the achieved estimated performance in 2016-17, which was 53%. And then we would go to the next objective statement, address serious corruption in the private and public sector. And the performance indicator is the number of serious corruption-related trial-ready case dockets where officials are involved, including procurement fraud and corruption. And the targets that were set at the time was 30 per financial year, but because we over the period of 5 years, we were asked by this committee to review those targets because they were deemed to be very low. So we did review the targets. Right, if we go to the next objective statement, it's about specialized investigation of serious commercial crime-related charges. And the performance indicator is the detection rate for serious commercial crime-related charges, percentage of trial-ready case dockets for serious commercial crime-related charges, and then the percentage the targets that were set was 80% over the 5-year period. Then we will go to the next objective statement, which is specialized investigations of serious organized crime. Performance indicators for that objective statement is the percentage of registered serious organized crime project investigations successfully terminated, And then we've included a new one, a performance indicator, which is the performance of identified, percentage sort of identified clandestine laboratories dismantled. On the first performance indicator for that objective statement on projects, the target set for us was 43% of the projects to be successfully terminated. And the new performance indicator on the clandestine laboratory, we've set a target for 20 for the financial year that must be terminated successfully. The next objective statement reads as the investigation of cybercrime-related cases, with the performance indicator reading as detection rate of cybercrime-related cases. And the performance or the target that was set was 34% for the financial year that should be achieved. If we go to the next slide, which speaks to the operational support functions of the DPCI, we have first the Priority Crime Management Center, which presents the priority offense threat picture that will direct the threat-based investigations. And we also have under the Priority Crime Management Center the Management Information and Strategic Planning section. We also have an operational support function, the Priority Crime Stress Investigation, which is made up of financial and asset forfeiture investigations, cybercrime, and digital forensic investigations. We also have the Integrity Management Unit, which is ensuring management, maintaining a professional standard through effective integrity management within the DPCI environment. And the last operational support environment is the support services, which is looking at the finance and administration in the environment, the supply chain management, and human resource management. The slide speaks to the overall analysis of the DPCI estimated budget. For the financial year 2017-18, DPCI has been allocated a budget of a total of 1.528 billion. This budget has been received from a total of 17,934 from the program in total, Program 3. And this budget allocation is an increase of 6.83% from the previous financial year allocation, which was 1.431 billion. This slide is an indication of the expenditure trends and estimates, which reads from 2013-14 financial year up to 2019-20 financial year. And we are currently on the 2017-18. That's an illustration of the trend of the expenditure and the estimates that we expect. And the next slide is a pie chart that is also an indication on Program 3, what has been the allocation to the specialized investigations, which is DPCI, which is an increase that has been alluded already in the previous slides of 8.5%. Now, this is an expenditure estimate expenditure per economic classification of the payment for the directorate. And here is just also a pie chart that will indicate that the breakdown of the 1.5 billion allocated, the bulk of the allocation is the compensation of employees, which is 77% of the total budget that has been allocated. And 20% of the budget has been allocated to goods and services. And then we have 2.1% for payment of capital assets of the total budget. And then the rest is the 0.6, which is for transfers and subsidies. Then just also, again, it's an illustration of, in terms of the entire Program 3, that the specialized, the last bar on this slide is the specialized investigations. Again, it's just indication of 1.5 to 8 billion that has been allocated within that program to DPCI. In terms of this slide, the economic classification year on year. Sorry. It's again to just give an indication as to, if we look at the budget allocation from 2016-17 financial year up to 2019-20, but for the, if you look at the column for 2017-18 estimate, it's a breakdown of the budget as such. If you look at the current payments, the compensation of the employees, which would take the bulk of the budget that has been allocated. And then it goes down to the transfers and subsidies, and also there we've got an allocation that has been given on terms of the transfers and subsidies, which is a budget of allocation of 4.5%, and then payment of capital assets, 31 million, it's allocation of 19.1%, an increase of 19.1%, and the total at the bottom is the 1.5 to 8 billion for the financial year. This is a breakdown of the budget in the DPCI. It will speak to the components that are at head office level. With serious commercial crime, the allocation is going to be 13.5 million. Serious organized crime, the allocation is 15 million for priority for specialized crime investigation, 14,700,000. For serious anti-corruption investigations is 13.8 million, 800 million. For integrity management unit, it's 5 million. For the priority crime management center, it's 10 million. And for support services, it's 94 million, which will be explained later as to why that allocation to support services. And then the provinces, for the DPCI, the budget allocation breakdown, for Gauteng province is 31 million, Northwest province, 15 million, Limpopo, 14 million, KwaZulu-Natal, 29 million, Mpumalanga province, 15 million, Eastern Cape, 29 million, Western Cape, 17 million, Free State, 15 million, and Northern Cape, 15 million. And the total allocation for the provinces is 184 million, with the head office components, it was 167 million. Then the total estimated budget for the operations is 351 million. Just this slide is to give a summary and probably explain the budget allocation to support that would have been seen to be very large. It's just to indicate that support services is responsible for the purchase or procurement of some of the resources such as the machinery and equipment, hence that budget is located there. And the compensation of employees will always remain the largest cost driver, which I had indicated in one of the charts that is constituting 77%, which is 1.177 billion out of the total budget allocated to DPCI. And then the DPCI is also nationally responsible for the payment of overtime, which forms part of the compensation of employees' allocations. It's just also to say that we are taking consideration of the cost containment measures that are announced by National Treasury and included in that budget that is allocated and located at support is the DBCI has also the responsibility to do and conduct community outreach programs, that we do awareness programs for the year. And therefore, other major cost drivers are fuel, communication subsistence, and traveling expenses due to the nature of the work that is being conducted nationally. And therefore, it's just to emphasize that we understand that good governance cannot be conceived in the absence of trust between governing parties, but we understand governance is important in the environment. And also, just lastly, to say that we do, as DPCI, adhere to the South African Police Service financial policies and systems. And we also take cognizance of the work that we're doing is key and has to be aligned to the government's medium-term strategic framework and the National Development Plan Vision 2030. And that National Treasury address weaknesses in procurement systems to ensure that a greater focus on value for money for all state departments, including DPCI, is very critical. And that the South African Police Service streamlining the reporting procedure which is supposed to be in line with Treasury regulations as things that we take cognizance of and are critical. Thanks. That concludes the presentation, Chair.
Thank you, General. So, members, we've complied in terms of the SAPS Act 17K parliamentary oversight. The National Head of the Directorate shall make a presentation to Parliament on the budget of the Directorate. So we've just done that. Now I'm going to ask the Accounting Officer of SAPS, maybe a broader view or anything he wants to add.
No, Chair. At this stage there are no additions. We are satisfied that the elements of what has been presented is what is contained in the annual plan of the department, and we are in agreement.
Thank you very much, General Baklani. Members must also just look at the main presentation that was made by SAPS in terms of the overview. That information is also available, so members can also have reference to that. Right, members, we will now go to questions, comments, and issues we want to raise with the accounting officer as well as the head, the acting head of the DPCI. Maybe the first couple of issues from my side. DPCI is a very important institution in fighting organized crime. There must be trust in the organization. And from Parliament side, we're going to monitor events very closely in that environment. The first point I must make, with the passing away of Judge Musa, there's a vacancy currently with regard to the inspecting judge. Now, we have noted the commitment by the new minister in terms of the process, but I think it's very important that we'll have to also include that in our budget report to Parliament, that the Portfolio Committee calls on the Minister of Police to expedite the process of talks with the Chief Justice and the Minister of Chief Justice and the Minister of Justice, so that the appointment of the inspecting judge can be effected as soon as possible. It's quite critical that members of the DPCI must have a recourse if there is any interference or perceived interference, that they can go to the office of the judge. And of course, if there's any members of the public that are subject to investigation by the DPCI. So from the Portfolio Committee side, we want to really call on the executive authority to expedite that process, because that will also again enhance oversight and good governance in that environment. Then the second issue, it's quite critical, especially in terms of the two Glenister court cases and the current situation, that there is trust in the governance of DPCI. And maybe to ask the head of the DPCI, there was over the weekend reports in the Sunday newspapers that a certain docket was requested by the executive authority, the minister. Now, if that is correct, that would be very, very concerning, and it would be unlawful. So we from the Portfolio Committee side want clear answers on that, in terms of view, in terms of, you know, in terms of accountability as well as political interference. We want to get a clarification. What is the exact situation in that regard? Because there must be a clear blue water distance between the executive authority and yourself in executing operational matters. Right, let's go to the other members. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. And to welcome General Matakata into the new position. My first question is, when are you, what is the progress regarding making you DPCI a separate vote? My second one, the AG has raised as one of its findings the manual data recording. Tell us about it. How far are you in addressing it, or what's happening there? My next question is on your arrests are high, but they don't match your convictions. There's a vast gap in between, and it leads me to the case of the social government who went to court charged with murder conspiracy, but the court changed it to something lighter. Does it mean there's a problem in the way you investigate cases, or what is the problem there? My next one is on, tell us about your cybercrime training. Are your men and women up to the task? Can I go on?
Let's go through. Otherwise, I'm worried that Honourable Mutlonga and Honourable Groenewald are not going to have any questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. Will you please provide us on an update on progress made in securing appropriate office accommodation for the directorate countrywide? It's for SARS, this one, and the DPCI. My second question, in slide number 6, percentage of registered serious organized crime project investigations successfully terminated. Why was it terminated? Please give reasons. In slide 6, performance indicator detection rate of cybercrime related cases, 28%. And you said target achieved. Why the target is so low? Slide 12, compensation of employees, 77%. Why compensation of employees, you budget for 77%? Why don't you take this man for the investigation of serious crime and everything? My last question, it's slide 17. Why Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State, Northwest, and Northern Cape have less budget? Please give reasons. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Abidjan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to welcome General Matakata and the presentation, but at the moment I don't have a question.
Thank you. Honourable Ramatlakane.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Acting Head of DPCI and SARS Management. Just follow up on your first statement, Chair. You said that we have now complied with the Act by virtue of DPCI having made a presentation. The flip side of that presentation, I want to ask the question. Last year, to be exact, we had a long discussion around this subject of the budget. 1.4, now it's 1.5. The question was, how did you get there? How did you get to 1.5? Last year the answer wasn't quite clear. We asked the question, what has been your submission? How do you get to this point what was your wish list in terms of your guesstimate, if you like, in terms of budget presentation? We didn't get an answer to that question. So I want to please ask this question again. General Matakata, how did you get to 1.5 billion? What was the wish list? What was the, on your request, based on what you thought is the work that you need to do in terms of the act? Secondly, Chair, the next question, which I also want to just add on your question, your earlier question, the issue about the docket, but I want to ask, over the newspapers, there's also this issue about allegation that, oh, the cell phone is now returned, but the cell phone is being wiped off of all the cases. Now, I was wondering, how did the cases get into a cell phone, if the cases are cases that are under investigation? If we could just clear the air about this allegation, because there's continuous feeding of this information to the media. If the cases are kept in the cell phone, including your cell phone, it would be a worry. But what happens if you lose your cell phone then, in terms of the cases that are kept in the cell phone? But that's, you understand the question, I have to say. Chair, I know it's just the second two questions now, but I want to... Okay. 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 I'm looking on my right. But let me ask another... The targets that deals with corruption in relation to public sector, if I like. Yesterday we had a discussion at length with SETS around this target, and to an extent that there was a page where some of those that took a target was removed. But you have the target on as a DPCI, which is good. We like that. We like to see that. But the question is that you have this target. Do you experience the same problem that the SEPs experienced? You were not in the room yesterday, but I'm asking the question to you. Because if you had the same problem, you would have removed this target. But I just want to understand from you, what are the challenges that you have in respect to adhering to the target itself? Then the other one, Chair, which is not included as part of your target, there is this National Bureau for Illegal Firearms. You don't have that as your target in your APP 1718. I'm just curious to know why. What is the reason? I know it's part of the new targets, but why is it not part of the 2017-18 financial year? If you can explain. Additional question on the budgets, regional budget, provincial budget. It's a good thing that we at least see, much as there is no federal approach, but at least we can see the budget for provinces. But the curious question I just want to know, General, how did you get to it? How did you get to the 31 million? Is it based on your work schedule? Having looked at the KZN to say, KZN, we have more worry around this level and this level, and therefore budget will have to follow that kind of functions. I just want to know what it is. Second to that part of that question is there's an off question about the office, the state of the office, but I just want to know provincial offices. What is the state of provincial offices of DPCI? You have a good offices in provinces, all provinces that are functional, operational. when I asked that question, the functionalities include the necessary managers in the office that manage the office. What is the problem with the data limitation, the manual data that has been asked in relation to manual data that is being used, particularly when there's a capturing around the public service, that corruption, the fight around corruption issues. So that's, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mushlongu.
No, thanks, Chair. My apology for coming a bit late. No, Chair, I'll be very, very short on this. Some of the things Honorable my Sagan has covered, however, I'm still interested to knowing exactly, because one, I think as a committee chair, it will be important. Yesterday we dealt at length with the question of perceived lack of capacity on the detective side. And the DPCI being an advanced or supposed advanced organ with that capacity of intervening in a much more stronger method in the investigation of crimes. I'm looking at the question particularly of the KZN budget there, when in fact we have had these ongoing unresolved murder cases. You recall, Chairperson, that before this latest saga on the head of Hawks took place, I asked him this question, that he visited KZN, particularly in the area of Mandeni in KZN, northern part of Durban, where the chief was gunned down in broad daylight, which is just an obvious thing, that that thing is actually it can be referred to as a terror to that community. When you get a person of that stage being executed in cold blood in that particular way, during broad daylight, that means the respect of law is completely, completely undermined. And when I personally saw General Nzemeza visiting the family, I thought that because this thing, there were even people who saw these people doing this thing, that there was going to be an immediate arrest of those people so that people can have a respect of the rule of law. But unfortunately, you know what he gave us there. He said that there are some loose things that need to be tied up. Unfortunately, then it's no more. It's gone. Now, with this budget, because I believe, Jefferson, that DPCI is to deal with the most advanced criminals who are also managed. Some of them have got money which by far exceeds a fiscal of government, that is at the disposal of government. Now I'm looking at this kind of budget that we have here. What really informs it? I'm going back to exactly what Honorable Ramasakan was raising. What informs it? Noting this particular mountain high or of the things that are happening here. We've got that matter of this money taken from that airport. I can't say it was just taken, because when you don't get even a single bullet discharged when criminals are, that means those people are just taking these things. But it tells you that this is a highly underworld, well-oiled body. Now, you take that Gauteng and that thing there. What really informs you, General, in terms of this? So that we can actually then say as a committee, we protect the interests of the public, and we also protect you and the members of the unit in ensuring that there is no what one of the experts in policing said. There is a possibility of fiscal dumping here in policing in this country because we don't get a good return of the money that is spent on each program, on most of the programs. Now, that is then question number one. Then question number two is what then was labored on yesterday. You know, Chairperson, to me it's very much worrying and concerning that with DPCI you had this matter on Minister of former Minister of Finance. He's going to be arrested, definitely. Last day, withdrawn. Oh, what a drama. Costing taxpayers and bringing terror to the people and, you know, all these things, to me, very much unnecessarily. Now, this last issue that we discussed yesterday, of this man who stays in that shack, which I saw it on news, when it was actually then, about the coup, about all these things, about... Then I asked myself, was the chief of the army briefed about this? That no, there is this particular possibility. Was the head of police, the acting national commissioner himself, as a person accounting officer? Because when you see a person at a level of a brigadier raising this, even that family of that boy would actually then, what would Hawks or Chairperson say? Even only if people then, who support those leaders who have said to be under threat, were to go and just finish off that family? Was the DPCI going to take full political responsibility of their foolish actions on that particular thing? Because what really informs is, now when the matter is before the court, now, no, it's of a lesser nature and all these things. Now, you say, really, what kind of a country are we living in? But the reason why, Chairperson, I would have gone, I decided to come here was, did the Guptas by any chance have any influence in this? Because I hear so many stories that there is something that touches on Gupta where they will be complainers in this particular matter. So that we can begin to say, do we still have a country, something that we can call a country, or it's gone? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member, Honourable Funderbalt.
Thank you, Chair. As you said, not many questions left, but at least I can start by saying I'm glad to hear that we are not asked to allocate money for a helicopter. Last time, the head just wanted a helicopter from us. So there's no helicopter, so let's start with that. Chairperson, no, on a serious note, we've heard all the questions. My question is that the impression and the image of DPCI in the eyes of the public is that it is a political instrument in the hands of the governing or the executive. I want to ask the acting new head, what is she going to do to get trust from the public back into the DPCI? That's my first question. Secondly, Chairperson, I want to know, surely there must be procedures, policy, doctrines, and everything when it comes to the handling of information, the storage of that information, files, and now we must read in the media from the outgoing head files in a boot of the car, besides the cell phone, what about the laptops and everything? And my question is, was there a breach on those procedures? And if so, what are the steps that has been taken from the PCI against the person who have breached those procedures? Because, I mean, the DPCI is supposed to have this very sensitive information. That's my second question. Thirdly, Chairperson, I want to know this whole saga as far as O'Sullivan is concerned, how long is this going to continue? Can we have an update that at least the Portfolio Committee can come to a clear mind as how long or how many arrests are we still going to have and how many court applications for unlawful arrests and everything that goes with that? Can we get a final update on that one? Then, Chairperson, I agree with what my colleague said. You know, this accused with murder list and everything, I'm not a specialized investigator, but with great respect, if you look into the case, it was quite clear something was wrong. But they still, how many resources has been used for that matter? And I agree with my colleague saying that. Chairperson, on a more technical issue, on your slide number 6, on specialized investigation of serious organized crime, your performance, achieved estimated performance for 2016-17 is 44.1% of registered projects successfully terminated. How many registered projects are we talking about? Is it 44.1% of 5, 6, 10? I'd like to have more detail on that. Chairperson, the other thing is, I'm worried about, if you look at the salaries, we're talking about 77% of the total budget of DPCI. That's much too high. And by that, I don't say that the people is not working hard enough and that they must lower the salaries or anything. But this is a serious problem because even if you look at the overtime, it's actually not paid by the budget of DPCI, but by National. So I'd like to have an explanation on the 77% and what steps are going to be taken to ensure that we lower that percentage. Yes, I think that is the other questions that has been asked, Chairperson, so I will comply, or well, I will stand by that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bailey. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and apologies for my late arrival this morning, and good morning to all present. A couple of questions from my side. I think the first point is to echo what the Chairperson said around the importance of restoring and reinforcing public trust and confidence in the Hawks and in salvaging its reputation, because that damage to the image of the Hawks and therefore the public trust and confidence in it has been rooted in what I would call a governance crisis, at least at the top of the institution, since arguably the suspension of the former head Anwar Dramat, and so the hope is that the tenure of the now acting head will see some turnaround and improvement in that. And of course, we saw the escalation in that governance crisis last Monday, with the former head's defiance and shenanigans. And so, my first quick question is just to get confirmation from the acting head. There wasn't anything in the media to suggest otherwise, but just confirmation from the acting head that the former head has not since attempted to access Hawks premises, offices, information, or systems, because if if that were to be the case, that it's a matter for the portfolio committee to take up, in as much as we're waiting for the court process to move forward. And then perhaps related to that, were he to make that attempt again, what the contingency plan in place by the Hawks to prevent that escalating to the same degree we saw last Monday? My second question, Chair, is I'm aware of complaints from the administration of the city of Johannesburg. There was also an article in the Star that I saw 2 or 3 weeks ago about how certain fraud and corruption cases reported from the city are not receiving the due treatments from the Hawks. There were allegations that this is a politically biased stance, and so I'd just like to get an assurance from the acting head and her team of the fact that going forward, at least, we will see impartial and merit-based treatments of cases that are forwarded to the Hawks, regardless of what the political administration of the source is, because ultimately the key point is we need to strengthen accountability, and it's through the investigations of the Hawks resulting in convictions that we can ensure that. Third question, Chair, is that linked to that same complaint, there were also allegations that there was a tendency on the part of the former head to centralize certain cases from provincial offices to national offices, and these tended to be cases that were politically sensitive, and therefore it was a way of stymieing and suffocating the cases by centralizing them under his direct watch, and then they wouldn't go anywhere. So can I just get clarity from the acting head and her team? Firstly, what is the established procedure in terms of criteria and that sort of thing for the centralization or escalation of cases from provincial offices to central? I would imagine it's a way of prioritizing them if they're seen as urgent and that sort of thing. And what has been the track record when cases like that are centralized? Because if they're centralized to prioritize them because they're urgent, but then it's the outcome is that they are the ones that take the longest and seem to go nowhere, that would be a contradiction in terms of what it's meant to do, but what the actual result is. So just an explanation of the whole procedure and systems and framework around the centralization of cases from provincial offices to national. And then my last question, Chair, is we heard from the DPCI last year that as part of the full establishments of the two specialized units, the two bureaus announced by the President in last year's SONA, there was going to be additional funding required. The full request was not forthcoming from Treasury, and we also heard in the presentation that cost containment measures are going to be a strong consideration. So the scope for expansion and additional resources is very limited. So in light of those resource constraints, but also on the other hand, the urgent need for the full capacitation of those two units to implement their mandates, can I ask what is the DPCI planning or sort of putting in place to meet that need as far as possible? Because it is an urgent matter. We keep hearing about how drug-related crime and the role of illegal firearms in gang violence, syndicate crime, etc., is one of the biggest problems and really drivers of rising violent crime. And so that's not something we can afford to let linger without tackling it urgently. Thanks, Chair. I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, members. I just got one question to the acting National Commissioner. One issue that is still, coming from the Biega Dramat era and hasn't been resolved yet is detective services and DPCR in terms of the allocation, who's going where. The focus should be, of course, that DPCI focuses on levels 4 and 5, although we see a lot of levels 1, 2, and 3 slipping in. You know, matters referred to DPCI where they actually need to be at detective services. So I just wanted to know whether that process is finalized, or if it's not finalized, when do you envisage that distinction and resource allocation will be finalized in terms of the post and all those kind of. That is the first round. Thank you, members. Let's go to the Acting National Commissioner and the Acting Head.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm first going to allow the Acting Head of the DPCI to respond to some issues that primarily falls within her competency. I'll then deal with leftovers or those issues that I have to deal with. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. The first question from your side was about the trust in the governance of the DPCI in relation to the docket that has been referred to that allegedly was taken by the Minister. Chair, to just state to the committee that this docket was never requested by the Minister of Police. The docket was just referred from the province of Free State by the acting provincial head to the national office. And the docket subsequently was forwarded to me by General Gemesa's office, and the docket is receiving the necessary attention. Thank you. And then the question from Honorable Malibati in terms of the progress with the separate vote. This matter was receiving the necessary attention, and especially this financial year, by the former Minister of Police. His office was going to be the one focusing on this issue. And as of now, I'm not sure whether the terms of the handing over from that office to the current Minister of Police, if there's any such progress or was this matter handed over. And as and when I have the opportunity to have a meeting with the Minister of Police, it's one of the issues that might be discussed. The second one was in terms of the AG, the findings in terms of manual data recording. We did, from the previous findings that were given to us by the AG, indicated that we will look into those issues in terms of the provinces where these findings were found. But we had taken the responsibility in terms of the plan, implementation plan that we had committed to correct some of these issues nationally in DPCI. We have communicated those shortcomings and the challenges that were discovered in the audit findings. So hoping that we, as indicated, the provincial heads in terms of the level of management and the component heads at head office level have a responsibility to ensure that we don't have these findings and challenges that have been picked up by the Auditor General. So we are adhering to the plan that we're supposed to have implemented in terms of making sure those findings are never repeated. In terms of the arrest that you had referred to and vis-a-vis the conviction rate, that you indicated that there seems to be many arrests, but the conviction rate alone. Unfortunately, I can't speak to conviction rates because sometimes these matters take too long in court. And some of the cases within our space take even more than 5 years to be finalized in court. So we could have arrested a lot of people, but the cases, when as and when are they finalized in terms of having those convictions, is a matter that is within the court and that we cannot really give clear answers now. And then the next question was about the matter that has been raised by the other honorable members as well of the Seshanguve, as referred to, that it's alleged as a coup. I'm not sure where did that come from. The charges are preferred by NPA. We would investigate, and then NPA would decide what charges to prefer in terms of whatever allegations have been investigated. So I think because that's already in the public space, it was indicated initially that the charges are conspiracy to commit murder, and therefore they again changed as the prosecution to what charge they would prefer to the man. So there is no such allegation of a coup plot, if I may state that clearly. And then the last question from Honorable
General, there's just a follow-up from Honorable Bachi on that matter. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. My question was, why were the charges wrongly formulated by DPCI?
Thank you, General.
Thanks, Chair. Indicated earlier, DPCI doesn't decide which charges that a man must be facing in court. It is the NPA. We investigate, and when we present the docket, then NPA will decide which charges they would prefer that the person must face in court. So I'm not sure whether there's been an indication that the charge was plotting a coup or whatever, but that is a matter that NPA must decide what charge the person must rather face in court.
Just two follow-ups on the same response, Honorable Mulabatsi, Honorable Bailey, thank you.
Chair, when a person is arrested, within 48 hours, that person must be charged, isn't it? And obviously there is a charge to say this person is charged with this. Am I right? Yeah. Now, the DPCI charged this man with murder conspiracy. My point is, why was it wrongly formulated?
Honorable Bailey, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's on the same issue. Just something that the acting head said, which didn't make sense to me. So maybe I need clarity, or it needs to be challenged. This notion that the NPA decides the charges. My understanding was that when a docket is forwarded to the NPA after the investigation is finalized, the NPA determines the prospects of prosecution. That's their decision. The decision is to decide whether or not to prosecute, not to decide what the charges are. And if anything, the entire basis of a docket is suspected charges or suspected charges, and then you investigate to find evidence to back up those charges. I'm not buying the story that there were never coup plot charges, and the NPA decided whether or not that would be the case. So I just need clarity on that, please.
Thank you very much, General.
Thanks, Chief. Can I just make maybe clear that when there's an investigation from the onset, especially of such a nature or complex nature, the investigators will get a prosecutor from the beginning to guide and decide eventually what will be the person charged on. So DPCI doesn't decide what must you be charged on. That is the responsibility of the NPA. They will investigate and then sit with the prosecutors who would take the docket and look at it and see what needs to be done further, or what will they decide as NPA, because they're the prosecuting authority. They would know in court what would stand as a case. Therefore, they will decide what charges will stand in a court of law, not an investigator. It doesn't work like that.
No, I know that the new acting head of the PCI, she's new. Most of the things might not have happened when she was before. Maybe she took over control. But in short, in summary, what she's saying, it means that the PCI, you are just going to meet a man on the street, take him, make him appear before the NPA, and NPA must just look at him and say, no, we think you are just guilty. You need to be charged for this. It's a misleading thing, completely misleading. I think let us just call things by their names, General. You as police officers actually then arrest a person, charge a person, correctly so, as one of the honorable members says. I think it's Honorable Mbeth. When NPA will evaluate according to the law, dictates of law, whether then to prosecute that, or just exactly like the case of the former Minister of Finance, Praveen, you level charges against him, and the NPA said, no, this thing is unprosecutable. And that is why, on the basis of that, those charges are to be dropped. Now, it is completely misleading. I don't really think, because if you have to work like this, I can just simply say, let it be all these videos that you have to plan. It's just a wasteland thing. Because it will mean that NPA are the police. According to what you are saying, NPA are the police. They are the ones who must go and investigate. And then what is your duty? Then that's why I am chairperson. Then what is the duty? What is then the reason? Why don't we then disband the hawks? Then allow, because NPA can actually do much better job than the DPCI.
Thank you, Mr. Slogu. General?
Can I just again explain? We don't, the prosecutors don't investigate, honorable members. DPCI investigate the matter. The prosecution will on, because we work as a multidisciplinary team as constituted in the legislation, that from the onset when you get a matter, you work with the prosecution to guide as well and indicate where you must go and so on. But the eventually, prosecution decides what charges they would want to take to court, which can be a case that can be winnable in court, not the DPCI. But we work as a team so that we can be clear what is it that the prosecution wants from us. That would be maybe seen as to be things that needs further investigation. So I will leave it at that, Chair.
The other responses?
Thank you. On the cybercrime that was raised by Honorable Malibati, the training of members, that you would ask, are they up to task? And we have indicated even the previous year that the plan has always been that, because we don't have a big dedicated capacity in terms of cybercrime, but rather train investigators as first responders as well, so that the capacity is built throughout the chain of the first investigations and also the dedicated specialized cybercrime training. And they've had successes in that regard, the cybercrime, specifically the capacity as such. So the training is something that is ongoing. We do get support from the other law enforcement agencies from other countries in that, so that they empower the environment in terms of what new developments and trends that are emerging for us to be able to deal with those cases that need that specialized unit. And then, Honorable Muller, you asked to update you on terms of the securing of the appropriate accommodation. I've been briefed that there was an appearance in this committee by the Department of Public Works and Supply Chain Division from the South African Police Service, that a task team has been formulated between the three entities, that is the Department of Public Works, the supply chain from the SEP site, and the DPCI, so that they can come back. I think they were given a date to come and give feedback to the committee in terms of what is the progress with the securing appropriate accommodation for DPCI. As of now, I've not yet been made aware, or a report has come forth as to what the progress is that they will come in and table to this committee. The next question was about the termination of projects. I think that the clarification that is being sought is, what does this termination mean? Termination is a term that is given. That is not, it's project that has been finally investigated and people are arrested and they've been taken through to court. So that means that in terms of the number of projects, if we had 70 projects in the DPCI for the financial year that we're investigating, we are expected, in terms of the target set, that 43% of those projects should be terminated successfully so, which means we have arrested people that have been taken through to court. So that basically is what it means, that the termination is people have been arrested, the project is finalized, and therefore there won't be any continued investigation on it.
Sorry, Chair.
Honorable Groenewald?
Now, I want to make a suggestion. Yeah, I mean, words does have meanings. The word termination means, or creates the impression, it was a project and suddenly it just stops. Shouldn't we then use a word like completed or finalized or something like that? Because the word of termination is not a good term for that one there.
Because it can actually mean it stopped halfway or you don't proceed. You know, it might be something that they should look at. Thank you, General. You can continue.
Noted. Thank you, Chair. I noted that maybe the wording should be reviewed. Then there was a follow-up question from Honorable Muller. Was about the low target of the cybercrime. It was referred to as being low. Previously, when we appeared, then the target was 18%, and it was said in the committee it is low. So we went back and we were asked to go and review that target because it's low. So we have reviewed it. The 34% is a reviewed target because, remember, we are just developing the capacity. It was the first time, I think 2 years back, that we had to, it had to be, yes, it was a new indicator at the time in 2016-17. And it was said it's low by the committee. So we had to go and review the target. So if the 34% is still considered to be low, then it means we have to review the 34% target.
Sorry, Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Acting National Head. 34% is low. Why can't you take it 60% so that you can work very hard to reach that target? If you said 34%, which means we are not going to work, we are going to take it slow. That's what I'm saying. If you can put it around 50% or 60% so that you can work very hard. But if you said 34%, it's under 50%, it's low. Can you please go and review it? Thank you, Chairperson.
General?
Thanks, Chairperson. We will go and review. Then the next question was...
Sorry. On the same issue.
Honorable.
Can we receive an explanation why was the decision taken to make it 34? Why 34? Is it just the figure?
The response to that... follow up, thank you.
Chair, it was a new indicator even then, 26, which was accepted that it would be over a period of time, 18% then. But then it was requested, it was indicated in the committee, it's very low, 18% is very low. Let us go back and review. So we went back, because it's a new indicator, and we need to see over a period of time how are we progressing and taking into consideration the capacity and everything else. So we are saying now, we will go and see, go back and see if we, it is considered it's very low, if it's under 50%. Because we have to take certain things into consideration and the capacity that we have that is developed, being developed.
Sorry, sir.
You know, as a comment, maybe we are also not doing justice because for this, as a follow-up to the point of clarity by Honorable Groenewald, you know, maybe if the DPCI was to brief us, maybe also assisted by the detective side, what kind of cases do they actually deal with, and how many have already been transferred? Do they get them transferred to them, or they pick and choose that we are going to deal with this and that? Because if they pick and choose, as DPCI, they can give themselves that maybe we can just be accusing them on that, but on that figure that they have come up. But even only if they are given cases of a particular nature from the from the police, particularly detective side, we also need to be knowing what is the current volume that has been transferred to them, maybe either province by province, so that we can actually be able to benchmark this to say this is what needs to be done if it is like this. Otherwise, at the moment we are just transferring, just shooting just in the air without even knowing what exactly are we dealing with here.
Remember, we've asked the question already to the Acting National Commissioner to give us again, you know, the progress in that demolition of work between the detectives and the DPCI. So we will get that response, because that's quite important in terms of resources. Because on the one hand, if they must still concentrate between on one and two, levels one to three, they go the overwhelmed. That's just reality. And I mean, we want them to focus on organized crime, commercial crime cases, and that should be the core business. So let's wait for that response. Right, General?
Thanks, Chair. The next question from Honorable Muller was about the budget allocation that was low to four provinces that we identified, which were the Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and North. Sorry. What is happening is that this budget allocation is also historical in terms of over the years, what was the expenditure of each province, and as well as the capacity levels, because historically these other provinces were considered as small provinces, and therefore even the capacity and maybe the volume of work was as such. So the provinces that were carrying the volume of work, the big volume of work, was the bigger provinces that way, and also the expenditure historically was determining what was the budget allocation. So basically those are the things that you look at and try and balance the work that is being done in different provinces, the capacities, and what has been the expenditure trends over the period of time. Then we have a question that came from the Honorable Ramatlakane in terms of the budget allocation that DPCI has. And he wanted to know whether there was a submission by the DPCI in requesting the budget that is now being allocated to the DPCI. I can say there was no additional input that was given to Treasury. Treasury decided and determined the allocation to DPCI, and which is by them indicated as being ring-fenced, and they just give an increment of 6%. So there's no such input that was given to them. in short, I can say that.
Maybe just on that one, on that response, because the issue of the two units, I think that was indicated in previous presentations, that's in birth to be formed. I mean, they will need additional capacity. I just want to know, was that included in the in the submission to Treasury for this financial year?
What we would do is, I think the as was presented last year, as per the request of the committee on the development and establishment of the two units, it was indicated that because the structure of DPSA is taken totally into consideration, not necessarily just the two units, so they form part of the bigger structure, overall structure of DPSA, and therefore even the breakdown was requested, if I can remind the committee, where the organizational development of SEPS was asked to go and look into that, because we need to understand what is the allocation in terms of the breakdown of the capacities for those two units. And that is in the process that they're still busy with, to give us the breakdown for the two units so that we can work out even the budget allocation that will be needed within the bigger structure of DPCR. So not exclusively just the two units.
Generally, you're actually saying you're going to use savings to fund it, because then if you don't got additional money, how are you going to fund those posts? Is that what you're actually saying? So, I mean, because the request from this committee was, I mean, if there's a need for additional resources and units, I mean, it must be included in the presentation to Treasury. I don't know whether maybe the acting national commissioner can assist us there, but I mean, it's critical that those two units are properly funded, and if they are priority, why was that not included in the normal MTF or the submission last year? If we can just get that clarity. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, thank you. I'll just in brief, because I'm to talk to the other issue a little bit later. This goes also with the question that Honourable Chair asked, and I think Honourable Mhlongo is talking to, in terms of cases, at which level of cases are to be investigated by the DPCI. The Act is very clear. Their mandate is very clear. I think it was outlined. It talks to serious corruption, serious organized crime, and serious commercial crime. I think those three broad categories. And the chair is correct with the observation. You still have cases not falling within that category that are investigated within the DPCI. And that is has to do with the history. When the Scorpions and were merged and the DPCI was established, there was capacity in the SAPS to deal with organized crime, commercial crime, and so on. That capacity was simply relocated to become part of the DPCI. And that capacity moved with the cases that they were investigating. Now, not each and every one of those cases will necessarily satisfy the policy requirement on the level of those cases. So why am I saying this? You will find that we could have posts in the environment within the establishment which are now used to investigate cases that are not supposed to be there. So that purification that Chair was talking to will assist us in relocating those cases back to the detectives, because we have now established that capacity within the detective services environment. If we relocate those cases, they will go with some people that are supposed to investigate those cases, and the room will be created, which will then be utilized to capacitate those specific units. So you may end up not with additional needs, because
baseline.
Yes,
actually, okay.
It may be from the current baseline that will be funded, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The next question from Honorable Ramatagani was around the issue of the cell phone of General Temeza, whether it was cleaned, the cases on the cell phone. I would not think so. There can't be cases on the cell phone. It doesn't work like that in the organization. So I can't really answer on whether he cleaned the phone or not, because it was something that was said from his lawyer side. So just to give an indication, we can't have any cases that are supposedly or perceived to be on the cell phone of anybody. No cases are supposed to be on a cell phone. So I cannot really give an indication that the cell phone was cleaned because there were cases on it or whatever. I was not sure of your next question of what it related to. I was not here yesterday. You referred to the targets, the challenge around the targets of corruption. So I'm not sure what was the issue around that. They didn't get clarity as such. What were the challenges in terms of the targets on corruption?
Just ask Honorable Ramadukani to clarify. Are you general?
Sorry, Chair. I'm not a member of parliament, but I know what Honorable Ramatagani raised. This was specifically relating to the trial ready, that in the detective services environment, we have removed the trial ready, and it is retained within the DPCI environment. I think that's the clarity which is required. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Chair. The targets that we're referring to, we decided to maintain and retain them because those issues are matters that are being investigated within the anti-corruption task team space with all other departments that are involved with those. So if even when we work on those cases and we work as a collective with 13 departments in terms of such matters that are indicated on the NTSF, when we need to decide on whether the target must be removed from the APP, we have to engage all those stakeholders. But the feeling was that we continue and indicate that this is what we're doing, and therefore we decided to retain that target.
I think, General, we agree with that approach because it's an indicator also to the public that in terms of progress of these cases that it's getting the necessary attention. So, General Rabi, you must take note. Right, thank you.
Thank you.
You can go.
And then the next question from your side was regarding the targets that are not visible or not even on the APP on the fire app. But what I can say, we as DPCI, we have our own operational plan. They have not been maybe elevated into the space of the annual performance plan of the organization. But we are working and monitoring and having our own operational plan internally at DPCI where we are monitoring those matters. So it's not on the APP yet, but we're looking into that because of the newly established unit. So we're working on it internally at DPCI on our own plan. Your next question, Honorable Ramatagani, was the state of the DPCI in the provinces in terms of their functionality and so on. Not sure what is the context, but all I can say is that with the all provinces that we have appointed leadership in terms of the 8 provinces as such, where we have provincial heads who are supposed to lead those provinces. The only province where we have a vacancy is the province of Free State, where the minister will decide when the post will be advertised. But the provinces are functioning and operational in terms of the work that needs to be done by the DPCI. The next questions were from Honorable Msongo. And I would say the first one, I'm not sure whether it was a statement, the perceived lack of capacity in KZN and also the budget, and you made reference to the case of the chief that was murdered there and the Orkia robbery. The cases in KZN that you might have referred to are receiving the necessary attention, although there's a tasking that is also inclusive of SEPs, which we have indicated previously, that DPCI is taking certain of those cases. We can't take all the cases that are there because some are not really serious cases as such. But we are working on those cases, and there have been arrests that have been shared in the media as well on some of the cases of KZN. And there's no arrest yet on the one that you specifically referred to, but the team has indicated that they are following up some of the issues or clues related to that case. And the last one from Honorable Msongo was again making reference to the supposedly coup arrest, and you specifically asked if the Guptas were the complainants in the case. And I would just indicate to you that two complainants had given us the letters that the suspect had reported and had written to them, requesting certain amounts of money to do whatever he wanted to do. And he had picked up, yes, one being a company that he asked for millions from, and the other as well was a company that is from the letter that he wrote to the Guptas that he wanted certain amount of money to assist them. So we worked on the basis of what was presented to us. Three letters were written to one specific company that is a complainant, in fact, in the matter, that they wanted us to follow up an investigation on this matter. And then question from Honorable Groenewald.
Sorry, Jim, I thought my colleague, I don't know, I know it's early
I
in
know
the
alliance is working.
I thought he was going to react. No, Chairperson, sir, do we understand it correctly? The investigation started after there was a complaint received, one of who are the Guptas. Now, I want to ask, when they started this investigation, I mean, for a criminal to write a letter for someone saying, I'm asking you some money to go and assassinate someone. Surely, Chairperson. Please.
Can we just have a clarification, thank you?
Just to clarify, the company that was approached by this man as Christ, you know, to them, that's the company that referred their matter to us to investigate because they felt this is becoming a threat. And I don't want to get really into the merits because they are in court now, but it is a private company, not necessarily the Guptas as well, that first referred the matter to us, if I can just clarify that. It was a private company that preferred the matter, where the man had several times, and it was appearing that he's pressurizing them, not the company. That has been the first person to, or company to come to us and say they are receiving this matter.
No, sir, Chairperson, that's a point of a bit clarity, Chairperson. Now, Chairperson, you know, to me, you know, it makes me wonder, Chairperson, really, I must be honest, whether, because to me it's very clear here, the reason why the state has got arms of intelligence, if you go and charge that person, what are you charging that person for? What kind of an act has been committed? Because you have one. In the first place, I want to assassinate those who are beneficiaries of Guptas. Then I write to Guptas again. Now,
stupidity of the matter, which tells you finally that there is a lot of madness in a man. And who else can pay even those, even 1,000 rands to a person of that madness? I'm just raising this question because even those people who claim to be complainants, you as police officer, particularly of that particular high authority, I would understand maybe if it is just an easy constable from college to say, I know, just pardon this man, he's still too young. You know, when you talk of an elite unit of the Hawks being played game by a man from the shack like that, honestly, you don't even need, I'm not a psychologist, but something is wrong upstairs, clearly. You go to any formal doctor, will tell you that there is something. I want to assassinate those who are beneficiaries of Gupta's, and they are listed by names. These and that and that and that and that and that. And Gupta's are also recipients of the same letter. And raising temperatures of the country in such a way that it can't even be newsworthy. No, man, there is something seriously wrong in that thing, General. I wonder really, what are you looking at? Because you will come out like what happened with the former Minister Pravin, with your trousers just pulled down. And where is the dignity of the country when then you are humiliated in the public for that? I think even the general of the general person is here as a poll, because it does, it's not an embarrassment to only you as DPCI, but to the rank and file of men and women in blue, some of them who are giving their lives to save the country. This foolishness, what is it? What is this?
Let's concentrate, because remember that we had the same input yesterday afternoon, so I you know, allow free speech, it's fine, but let's just complete, then we go to second round. Honourable Knobel?
Just a follow-up, it's a question, it's not a speech, Chairperson. May I ask, I can't remember all the names. Can I ask, was for instance the name of Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma also on the list? And was that also used in the criteria to give her Presidential Protection Unit protection?
Yeah, well, I think we made the decision yesterday that General Patlane will come back to us with a report on that matter. So, but of course, he's welcome to respond. I think let's get this round done, and then we're going to go to the second round. I know it's very important matters, right?
Honorable Chair, we can't draw any relationship to the threat analysis done in respect of the former AU chairperson to the man that we are talking to. But I also wanted to plead that maybe because the matter is before the courts, that it be allowed to be processed there. And just as Honorable Mkhongo correctly suggested, the man is going to be subjected to a psychiatric evaluation, which will tell whether all the screws are loose or tight, and then we can take it from there. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Grunewald wants to raise Area 51, but at this stage.
I can't ask how many screws are loose and how many are tight. No, I'll see the answer. Thank you.
Let's go to the other response. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The next questions were from Honourable Grunewald, where you wanted to know the statement that is in there that we are used as a political instrument as the DPCI, and what am I going to do to get the public trust into DPCI? I think I've said it even before that for us to have been perceived as this instrument, political instrument that is used based on whatever the reasons were, is for us to change that perception by indicating and focusing on the work that we are supposed to deliver on as mandated by the legislation, that we focus on those specific focus areas of serious corruption and serious organized crime and commercial crime. So rather, let us work hard to make sure that the public sees that through our successes, in what we deliver. And let us not be measured or by the cases that are perceived to be political in nature that we are used as a political tool by government. So I'm asking that I be allowed that space to just make sure we focus on what we're supposed to focus on, and the successes will determine and tell what we are doing. The next question from your side was about the files in the boot of the car. I'm not sure where did that come from. I don't know about the files, where these files allegedly were in the boot of General Temeza's car. I can't answer that one. You further went to ask about the breach in terms of the procedures or steps that will be taken. And I suppose the breach is referring to General Temeza going to back to the office on the day he went back to the office. All I can say is never been to the office.
No, sorry, Chairperson. That wasn't. My question was, I suppose there must be some procedures in the handling of files. I want to know, and information. There must be procedures to say under which circumstances are you allowed to have some information on a laptop. And if it's on a laptop, do you lock it away every evening? What do you do? I now want to know whether there's a reason why I'm asking you, because there's a follow-up coming.
General, thank you. Acting National Commissioner.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. There is a policy and a procedure, Honorable Khuneva. It is, if it is a laptop, a iPad, because those are portable, you go home and wherever with them. The office ones will remain at in the office, and if like in the situation we find ourselves in, there is a change of command, there is a process we call the handing over process. It's not a process that for example takes overnight, because stock taking of the entire environment is to be conducted, and the incumbent or the outgoing will then sign off on what is it that I was given when I came in, and what is it that I'm leaving behind. If that clarifies the matter, Chair.
Thank you, Chief. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you, General. But now I want to ask, in the case of General Ntlemiza, were there checks to ensure that when you receive back the laptop, that no information was erased? Because you can determine it. And if it was erased, then I suppose it's a contravention of the rule. So were those checks done, even on his cell phone? If it has been done, did you find that any information has been removed? And if so, what are you going to do about it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let's go to the responses, General Pashani.
Honorable Chair, it is early days for that, considering that the General has tendered, an appeal, but also there was, if I'm not wrong, it is this week, there is an application before the court to try and interdict the Minister on the decision that the Minister has taken for him not to be in the office. So we did not go into that thorough exercise of scrutinizing those resources. What we were pleased with is that what had to come back was then handed back. We did not take it at step forward, but at an opportune moment, that could be done.
Thank you, sir. Sorry, but this is important. So may I ask what has been taken back at this moment?
Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I'm speaking on the correction because I don't have everything with me. Remember, the General would have had a vehicle that with protectors that will be responsible for his protection, that all that is back. The official cell phone is back. The laptop or iPads, all that is back. So what I still with him will be what we call the 108. 108, like all of us get issued with an appointment certificate and so on, because that you take back once the services are terminated. Thank you, Chair.
Last one, Chairperson. So you've got the laptop, you've got the iPad. Is there a process to go through those instruments to determine whether any information has been removed?
No, Chair, I thought I had spoken to it in that we are not doing that audit yet of what was on the equipment. That can only be dealt with later on once all these other processes are completed.
Colleagues, we will have to move. Secretary of Police, you must just wait. But let's go to the other responses.
Thanks, Chair. Continue with the responses. The question was on the O'Sullivan cases that Honorable Kroonewald wanted to know. As we would know, there are various cases that are being investigated within DPCI, where some already is attending court. Some of these investigations are not yet finalized, but there are those that is already attending to court. I think you wanted to know when will this be finalized. I can't really say now when will those cases be finalized that are still under investigation. But those that are in court are in court. Perhaps maybe next time I'll come back and indicate when will those cases be finalized that are under investigation, that are within the DPCI space. I've dealt with the slide 6 in terms of the term termination that you also raised. The next questions are coming from Honorable Mbele, where you also asked how we're going to salvage the image of the hawks in terms of what is how we are being perceived. And I indicated already that the only way for us to change perception is for us to show that we are working and addressing cases that are mandated to us in terms of the legislation, where we would be clear in terms of the successes that will be clear in terms of what are we investigating, and it must be in line with what the legislation is saying to us. And it's going to be not an easy task, obviously, to work on the perception or how we are seen as a hawks, but it's something that one will have to work with the team that is within the DPCI to salvage the image. I think we've answered the question about Janan Lemeza in terms of accessing the office, but you further asked what would be the contingency plan. But it is, I think it has been clear that the mere fact he has not come back to the office after the one day that he came and left, that he is not going to come back until his matters are finalized in the courts where he has petitioned the courts. And I can indicate that he has not been in the office at all. Your next question was referring to the complaints by the city of Johannesburg, the mayor of the city of Johannesburg. We have cases that within our space that have been referred by the city of Johannesburg that we are investigating. Some of the cases are already in court. And subsequent to this complaint by the city, by the mayor of the city of Johannesburg, I asked that the provincial head of Gauteng meet with the officials from the city so that we clarify what cases are they complaining about that we're not investigating or that we allegedly don't want to investigate. so that we get a clear sense, because we have cases from them that are in court and some are busy that we're currently investigating. So that meeting did take place, and the officials from the city were supposed to submit the cases in their space that they would deem that are not maybe getting the necessary attention, so that we can address the matter if the cases are not necessarily receiving the attention. So that is a matter that we are addressing amongst ourselves. And then you ask also about the centralization of cases, that there's an allegation maybe that the General Ntlemeva has taken some cases to head office. I can say for sure that he would take cases depending, and it would be informed by his discretion in terms of why he wants to take cases and centralize them at head office, and with some of the components that are there. Some of the cases that would be located in the provinces are cases that would have been, that would have to be investigated by the anti-corruption task team. Therefore, maybe that he would use that discretion and call for that investigation to be located within head office by this task team. And in some instances, the case might be preferably get the necessary skills that are within the Serious Economic Offences Unit that is located within commercial crime, depending also on the complexity of that matter. And in some instances, he would decide to formulate a task team based on his own discretion. So as national head of the DPCI, you have that discretion to take some of the cases and prioritize them within the head office level. But if, you indicated perhaps that there might be other reasons for that, I wouldn't know. But all I can say is that you would use that discretion, that this case might be better investigated at this level. Because some provinces don't have that necessarily the capacity to deal with some of those complex matters. And they don't have the capacity that the anti-corruption task team has. It's certain provinces, only few provinces that have that capacity. You also raised the question in terms of the establishment of the two units, in terms of when will they be fully capacitated. As we had come the last time we appeared here, in terms of the capacitation of those two units, we did indicate that the structure of DPCI is approved, and therefore organizational development is working to do that breakdown so that we know what would be the full capacity. And in the last appearance, when we gave progress, they undertook to do that, and they're currently doing that because we need to make sure that within the approved structure there is a clear breakdown of how many of the province must we have and the different levels in the province. So that is something that organizational development is currently working on. I will await the finalization of that process.
Thank you very much. At this stage, we're going to break for tea for 7 minutes. We will come back with the responses of the general and follow-ups. 7 minutes. Thank you very much. Now, to give an opportunity to the Acting National Commissioner to respond to some of the questions, and then, of course, we will go to the follow-ups. Now, I'll give ample opportunity.
My question was not answered.
Yeah.
Okay.
That. Let's give first the Acting National Commission opportunity to respond, and then we'll go to the members who feel that they've got further input. General, you're welcome.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. There is a question that we had deferred on day one, which the Chair asked relating to DPCI and the notion that the accounting officer has been a stumbling block either in the provision of resources and or approval of structures. And I had said that I prefer that the question be answered while my DPCI colleagues are around, because I don't want to say anything which they are not privy to. Firstly, it must be placed on record that DPCI is not a foreign entity to the South African Police Service. It is for that reason that it is located within the Police Act. It is for that reason that the Act provides only for one accounting officer, and that's the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service. And it provides for reporting on matters that relate to accounting directly to the National Commissioner in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. We will support the DPCI in enabling, to ensure that there's enabling capacity to execute the mandate of the DPCI. We have no reason not to. If we were not to do that, it will be unfortunate, because then we will be disadvantaging ourselves and going against the policies of government, which can never be acceptable. So at no point will I, in my capacity as an accounting officer, have not given preference to any issues that were tabled with me by the DPCI. If you recall, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I think it was during our last appearance when we were presenting the APP, there was a question that was asked on the finalization of the structure. There was, if you go to those minutes, specific reference by the National Head of the DPCI, who said, together with the National Commissioner, we are working on this matter. We believe that by the 15th of December, we will have finalized the issue relating to the structure. I followed up on that because by the 15th there was no delivery. I think somewhere early in the year I saw the National Head and the Deputy National Head on the issue related to the structure, where we deliberated and refined that structure. So what I was expecting to see following that engagement was the final version, which was to be sent off to the minister for sign off. I'm yet to see it. So I was surprised when I've learned through the media that the accounting officer is a stumbling block. We will ensure compliance with the Act. We have got no reason to work against each other. I think we have got more reason why we should work together, especially to ensure that we expedite the processes and allow the execution of the mandate. So I just thought I needed to clarify that part. The second issue that the chair, the acting head has responded to was with regard to the establishment of a program or DPCI as a vote on its own and so on. Chair, I'm not aware of any submissions, new submissions to any level following the position that was communicated to us by National Treasury. The last documents which we consider to be the official position was communicated on the, I think it's the 16th, there was a document first, the one of the 10th of July 2015, which was directed to the National Commissioner. General Pierre was still in the office on that, which simply did not favor that position. And June the 16th last year, we have received this one came following a submission by General Ntlemeza from National Treasury, which communicated the position to maintain the status quo. But I saw in that provision that there could still be some work which has been done. I'm trying to locate the document which I don't find now. But that's where we are. As far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen any new submissions to Treasury. As the acting head was saying, the minister or the former minister was going to take the process forward. I'm not privy to all those details. Honourable Chair, honourable members, the other question was on the level of cases. When is that process going to be finalised? I actually forgot to touch base with her during the break to work on the timeline, but I do know that I have directed the acting head, the divisional commissioner of detective services, but also the deputy national commissioner for human resource, as well as the divisional commissioner personnel, to expedite this because it is long overdue. And as I indicated earlier, the relocation of the cases that do not belong or that are not to be investigated in the DPCI will ensure efficiency and effectiveness of the DPCI, because we will then give priority attention to those serious cases that falls within the mandate of the DPCI. We are now in May. Let me undertake that by the end of June we should have finalized the process, because at least there is engagement which guarantees that we would have delivered on that. So if we allow space, Chair, by the end of June, but that will not necessarily, it will be having finalized the position, and the migration will then kick-start following that the end of June timeline. There was a question, Chair, by Honorable Muller on the 77% in as far as the compensation budget is concerned. Like I have said, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that what takes the biggest chunk of the budget in any government department is employees' compensation. It ranges around 78%, 74%. What we have communicated was 76%. In this case, it's 77%. But we believe, Chair, with the relocation that we are going to realize, it will enable the better management of that 77%. Not that you are going to take anything from DPCI, because the total budget that is communicated here, it's specifically earmarked for the DPCI. So where there is an injustice currently is that that money may be spent on cases that are not budgeted for within the DPCI environment because of the level. So the relocation will help us to manage that, Honorable Chair. There was an issue relating to accommodation, Chair. I think the General has spoken to the issue following the appearance and the establishment of that task team. We will take a report from the task team on the progress made and forward it to the portfolio committee. I don't have final details of it at this stage. Honorable Ramatlakane asked a question which I don't think we responded to correctly to it. What informs the growth from 1.4 to the 1.5 now, and the General Treasury did the allocation. Treasury would have communicated to all of us as government departments what Honorable Groenewald once again reminded us of, the hostility measures, which meant that there is no austerity measures. Yeah, which meant that the coffers of government has become a little bit low, and that only critical submissions will be considered. I am not aware of any special case made in towards the E&E that was finally allocated. I think it will be advisable for us, once we have finalized the process, Chair, on the relocation, to then concretize that submission, because then it will also be informed by a clear position on what capacity is required, informed by the structure, both from an organizational as well as a functional perspective. So the increase that we have seen is the CPI, which will normally be coming our way, because we can't be expected to manage with the same 100 rands that we were managing with last year. I think, Chair, I've taken care of those that were outstanding. If there's something that I missed, we are more than willing to respond.
Great. Members, those questions that's outstanding, as well as second round, but if we can keep it concise, no, let's say, speeches there.
Sure, Nabos, just one, I just wanted to find out, unfortunately I came a bit late, whether then the projects, like for example the Kruger National Park projects, have also been catered for, so that as we engage moving forward, we won't actually then cry on our spilled daughters as well.
Honorable Lakane.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and the responses, General, where you touched. But my question, I've got two follow-ups, really. The one is in relation to the budget. I think General Patani is talking to it. My problem that, or my question was, I hear the outcome, the end result. The question was, what is the foundational preparatory work for budget by DPCI? Because the Act suggests, or the Act in fact directs the head of DPCI, I think section 17 of that Act, that head will prepare a budget estimate, which will then be submitted to the National Commissioner for submission in the normal MTEC process of government. So my question was, what was DPCI preparation? What did they present to you as their budget, like you would normally do as a government department in terms of budget process? And that process, I think, start already, that cycle start early by April already. That is the question I'm asking. Then the answer I got, the Treasury decided. Now, I have a problem with that. This is why I'm saying there is an act that put obligation. The next question, Acting General Fasani, you were supposed to receive a presentation of the budget from DPCI, of the estimate for the 2017-18 for this budget. You haven't said whether you did receive it or not. all you said, you spoke about austerity measures. So that was not my question. My question is different, is that there's an obligation, legislated obligation, for both the head and yourself on the budget. Was that complied with? That's the question I'm asking. And then the second one, Chair, the follow-up question is this. There's been this long discussion about the charges. Who decide on the charges? And the charges that, the investigation and the charges. And the answer that was given created an impression for me, which is an unfortunate impression, because I understood the discussion to be suggesting that the Hawks operate based on the Act. And based on this Act, one is the prevention of organized crime. It tells you what is going to be considered as an organized crime, the activities. For which, if there is something untoward that somebody has committed, you would say you have a charge or case to answer, and that case to answer is in relation to this particular Act. So you would, as a Hawks, make determination that there is a provision of a breach or a violation of this particular provision of the Act, for which you are now charging me for that violation. That job can't be the job of the, in my understanding, can't be the job of MPA. MPA would say, for us to be successful in this case, you as a police investigating person, you've got to satisfy these questions. These are the questions that you must go and answer in your docket, because they are not necessarily specified. Why are you saying there is a provision, this provision is breached? Based on what you are charging me for. It can be the other way around, that MPA would do the charges, but they will say, in this one we're not going to succeed. These charges are five of them, or charges and the attachment of the charges, this one. But it can't be the job. Am I right? It cannot be the job of the NPA to decide on that charge. You are the charging authority, makes the determination upfront of that particular violation. The explanation went the other way, that no, it is not quite us. It's more of a negotiated issue between us and an NPA. Am I right or am I completely wrong in my understanding? I may be wrong, but the way I understand, the charging authority here that makes sure that the law is complied with is the police and yourself. That's where the charges are emanating from.
I'll come back, Honorable Mula, and then Honorable Malabatsi, and then Honorable Funavot.
Thank you, Chairperson. General Matagata, as you are a new acting national commission, the acting national head of Hawks, are you getting the necessary support from SAPS and members of DPCI? I know that you are working with them as a deputy head of Hawks, but now you are acting. Are they giving you the necessary support? My second question is, in slide 18, you said DPCI to conduct community outreach programs. When was the last you conducted the community outreach? Thank you.
Honorable Mulubachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. The notorious Pastor Timothy, I'm not sure of the surname, the one who got arrested last week in NPE. This morning on SAFM, it was said he was receiving constant information from the Hawks before he got arrested. Do you know of such an activity? My second one is on the Senzo Meyer case. I know I'm going to stress General Patani now. the case is now with the Hawks, as I understand. Are we going to see some arrests effected soon? My third one is, did you get the necessary handover when you got into the office? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chair, my question or follow-up is also linked to what the Honourable Ramaphosa has asked now. But I also want to know, because, you know, before we have the Hawks, we have the Scorpions. And the main reason, or one of the main, the main reason for the success was the coordination and the joint investigation between members of the Scorpions then and the prosecuting authority. They actually work together to ensure that they have a successful case when they go to court. So I'd also just want to hear, when the Honourable Ramakatlakani's question has been asked, is that relation, well, I mean, it's not formal the same, but it's part of, is it still part of that relation? Thanks.
No, Chairperson, I don't really think that we can change this meeting into a workshop of what the Hawks need to be doing, because we are not going to achieve a single thing there. I think it will be better to say, because the response that we got, really, it made me feel to say, when you have got such advanced criminals, the question that we need to ask as a committee, is this unit really well positioned and ready to deal and tackle those in their organized form as they stand, when you can have leadership saying, no, we don't necessarily prefer charges on individuals, only the those who represent the state, like the NPA. And it means there is a long way to go there in terms of capacity. There is a long way. It's like you are talking to a child who's doing first year. And yet, we have got the house burning. Chairperson, I cannot, you know, I know, if and only if we don't take or arrest the situation head on. And we have got this build-up happening, for example, in KZN. You know, before 1994, what happened. That province, I know, I'm from that province. And you don't actually then arrest the situation. You make people feel that they are bosses when they are just claiming lives, naming people the way they want, because you have got this incapacity at this level. As much as I differ with General Poison, but at least he went toe-to-toe with those assassins in that province, and then they had something to be fearful of. But if we have got such a state of disorganization here, the way I can see it, Chairperson, it will smack on our face. We will go and cry to the uniform division of police, when in fact our DPCI will only be playing the joke that we have seen taking place. Without, it will be better, Chairperson, that you go and meet with the powers that be, so that you settle this thing, and then we get something that can actually then work. Otherwise, I can see a lot of contradictions here, and I am quite convinced we will be lamenting and lamenting and lamenting, and that's why then I said, here is General Cruz. He went down, signed by the Acting National Commissioner, to KZN, commanding the National Intervention Unit. Criminals who had actually maimed people were arrested, but today those people, I can tell you, those arrests are just useless, because those people are just doing as much as they like, and I am told, General, that they are about even to finish those who are supposed to be key witnesses in those cases, and which means then they will just go free. And they will then come back and lament that the prosecutors are doing this, criminal justice system is not, when in fact we allow this thing to actually come and smack on our faces. It's totally wrong, and I think Chairperson, let us just take a decision that you as a chairperson will take this matter up with the powers that be, so that at least there can be something that can be done. There is something, there is total confusion and lapse. I can see that thing. Thank you.
Well, Honourable Songu, it's part of our business that we must make recommendations in our report, and next week we will utilize that process to address those issues. Honourable Mbele, you will be the last. Is there any other questions before we move to the conclusion and then to the Secretariat?
Thank you, Chair. Just two from my side. The first one is in relation to the matter of the so-called coup plot case. Is from what I understand and from my perspective, that incident, which I believe is an isolated one, so it's not, you know, the end of the world, but in itself, it is an example of what I would call a system failure. There was some breakdown in what I assume is a series of filters and checks to detect that something was off there. Because if after, I was just re-looking at the statement that was issued from the DPCI on the 26th of April, that if after a seven months of investigation and the collection of evidence during that period, it wasn't picked up that the merit and the substance of the allegations wasn't quite all there, then somewhere the system didn't quite work the way it should to pick up that and so my question there is just what is being done to review how that investigation unfolded in order to fix and strengthen the systems to prevent that sort of thing happening again. You know, I'm thinking of an analogy where I think some, if not all, of the members of the committee, at times we receive calls or correspondence or complaints from members of the public, and after a while you realize that you're dealing with what I call a wombat. There are people out there who are attention-seeking, maybe slightly unhinged, and because you're a public figure, they kind of come towards you like a moth towards a flame. But after a while, you develop a filter to say, oh, this one is crazy because they wanted to tell me about having invented the cure for cancer. It's like, well, no, that's not true. So systems, I think, I always say it comes down to systems management and quality of leadership. When you have those two factors in an organization sorted, that's the entire job done. So when the systems fail, it's important to learn the lessons, and I'd like to know what the remedial course is going forward for that. And then just to pick up on a point from the PowerPoint, in terms of the community outreach that is planned, just a brief outline of what the content and the purpose of that community outreach is. Because I would imagine that most cases that the Hawks picks up are either something that they pick up in the course of, you know, interception and other intelligence work, or it's cases that are referred from the SAPs as they're escalated. So I could be wrong, and if I am, I would love to be clarified. I think there's probably very, very few cases where cases come from members of the public on the ground directly to the Hawks, as opposed to institutional referrals, you know, like my COJ example earlier. So I'm just wondering if the bang for the buck of community outreach, at least you can explain to me the content and the purpose of that, is necessarily all there. You know, if we're being squeezed on the one hand around ensuring speedy and full establishment of the specialized units, I would think that community outreach probably isn't the most important priority, and that trade-off needs to be reviewed. Thanks, Chair.
Very much, Honourable Bailey. Let's go then to the responses, generals.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question from Honorable Samatakan that I would respond to, and it again ties up with the statements by Honorable Song. I will maintain, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. In this case, this is how we work as the DPCI with prosecutors, including this case. We have a process that we call prosecution-guided investigation. And it touches on what was asked earlier about how the DSO then worked with prosecution. The same principle works. NPA has dedicated prosecutors in line with our own structural arrangement at DPCI. So we have prosecutors dedicated for organized crime, for commercial crime, for anti-corruption. Any matter that comes to our space that we investigate, we will sit with them. And therefore, again, they are the ones who decide on what charges based on the investigation that is on the docket before them. So we don't decide what to charge. They even it's referred to that they draw up a charge sheet, which means the charges that they're going to take to court on the suspect on whatever the issue is. So the same principle applies to all the work we do. We investigate, we go sit with them, and they are part of that process whilst we investigate it from the onset to guide, as it's called, prosecution-guided investigation. So they will work with us from that onset and refer you to beg to go and gather further evidence and so on. Ultimately, they will draw up a charge sheet that is decided by them what to charge this person on, and therefore if it's a winnable case in court. So the same principle, although we don't have prosecutors as DSO, we work with them because they are dedicated to the different environment. And then the second question that was raised, I would leave it maybe to General Patan can assist me. I don't know what is the Kruger National Park project, if I may. The second question came from Honorable Muller in terms of whether I am receiving any support from SEPs and then also within the DPCI environment. From the SEPs, I do get support already. We are engaging on various issues that they are going to give me support on with the senior managers, especially the deputy national commissioners. So that support is then from the national commissioner in terms of how we move forward in terms of all the work that needs to be done within the environment, and especially where we know that from an administrative and support point of view, we still have to comply with some of the regulations in the environment in terms of the SEPs regulations. So that support is there. Within the DPCI, there is support because we have to continue with the work that is in front of us. I've worked with the management that is there in the DPCI. To answer the question that's followed on the awareness campaign, and you asked the question when last. Currently, this financial year, we have not had any awareness campaigns, and I would want to link this with the question maybe that was asked by Honorable Mbell to explain what community outreach is. For us, it was supposed to be about, it's about awareness campaigns that we take to communities. What we do, we look at, in each province, all provincial heads would have community that, even if four pay awareness campaigns on various issues that we need to bring to the attention of the communities. It would be maybe on human trafficking, if there's prevalence in that area or province. It would be on corruption, where we would target specific target groups, especially in some departments or municipalities, because we see the prevalence of those challenges. It would be on maybe pyramid schemes, where we know people are being targeted, and they might not be understanding some of these challenges. So we have various of those, and on drugs and so on. So each province would have those kinds of awareness campaigns. Besides us just also targeting the media houses or go and have interviews, but we go to the communities and try and bring those messages for them to understand some of these challenges. So that is what perhaps the community outreach was about, is the awareness campaigns we conduct in the different areas in the country. The question on from Honorable Molibasi. First, you asked about the minister, the pastor Omotosho, who was arrested. Unfortunately, I didn't follow what you said today in terms of the case, but you indicated that he has been receiving constant information from the Hawks. We don't want maybe to now indicate what is going on in that regard. Well, there's some investigations. We are following up further on this matter, and I would respectfully ask not to disclose it here now. And then on, I can't respond. I don't have a sense of maybe your case. Maybe it's not within DPC. I don't know where it's located. Then you asked lastly if there was any handing over done. I have not had yet. I didn't have any handing over. So I'm just working in the environment with what is currently there. And as such, some of the cases I'm following up in terms of what is happening in the environment. Due to the nature of what has happened, there couldn't have been any handing over. And then the question from Honorable Groenewald, I think I touched on in terms of the working relationship that I explained now. And then, Honorable Mbele, you raised the question of, based on this case that is currently topical, the so-called coup plot, that is there a way that we review how this investigation unfolded and what remedial steps? Definitely so, because this investigation took place since last year, so October, until now it went to court. So one, having identified the gaps, maybe, that has been picked up and some of the issues that are necessary for us to get clarity on. It is a matter that I'm taking up with the environment and that is investigating this case. So as I indicated earlier, I still need time to go into each of the matters that are located within the environment to have clarity and see what is the progress made. So this is one of the issues that one needs to get a sense of what had happened and therefore take decisions based on that. I will end this.
So we'll give over to the supervisor of detective services.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The first one, Honorable Msongo, on the Kruger National Park, not only limited to the Kruger National Park, but the rhino poaching project. It remains to be funded. It's a project conducted by a multidisciplinary team wherein we also have other specialized units including members of the Hawks. So the budget is not necessarily located in the DPCI budget that we are talking of. It is within the investigation environment. The one by Honorable Ramatlakane on the submission to Treasury, my prayer was a follow-up was not going to come, but unfortunately my prayer was not answered in this instance. Honorable Chair, the allocation which we are talking of here is informed by a submission that was made for the MTEF. It is not informed by an annual submission. Simply put, there was no additional submission last year. So the money, and that's why, oh, I see he became very tired because he has been presenting. I had the slide there to try and show the figures over the year. So year year two becomes year one. So the 1.4 was for the previous year, 15-16. For the MTF period, that 1.5 would have been in the second year of the MTF, which then became year one now for the 2017-18. So a straight answer is we did not have an additional submission. The funds that are being utilized, which we are talking to, are part of what was submitted and approved for the MTF process. That is why I said for anything additional, we may in this year, following the conclusion of the structures, the calculation of the capacity requirements, and then it will fit into to enable the coming year submission. And that's where I was trying to talk to the austerity measures, because we knew that in many of these we needed more, but no additional funding was going to be. There it is in front of us, Chair. I think slide 10, you'll note 1.4, 1.5. So we already know what is it that we are getting in the coming financial year in as far as the DPCI is concerned. If that was to change, it will be changed by an additional submission making a compelling case why that is not going to be adequate, but it was not the case for the current financial year. And I thought, let me also just briefly talk, and I think Honorable Ramatlakane, Honorable Mhlongo spoke to this issue at length, and I think Honorable Mbele on the charges of the coup plot case. One lesson that we must learn out of this unfortunate incident is that we must refrain from conducting investigations through the media, because that which is being alleged and the fact that are proven to allow a docket to be submitted for a decision are far from each other. People make baseless, unfounded allegations, and we run with those stories in the media, and it pains this person like this only to find out through at the end of the investigation that it is not so. So I think if there is one lesson that we ourselves must learn is what information do we communicate, but as far as possible refrain from providing too much detail on a matter which is still under investigation until such time that the competent authority has taken a decision on the facts before him or her on whether there is a prima facie case or not. The one Honorable Mulemasi of Senzo Meiwa, it's again a docket which is being allocated to DPCI by the media. One moment, it's with them. At some point, I read about it from the media saying the docket was taken from Gauteng to head office for inspection. Now I'm asking myself, why must a docket that is to be inspected to be communicated through the media? Because we have got that inspecting capacity at the level where that docket is. It doesn't go through a specific machine at head office. The same process that we follow on each case gets followed. That case remains a case that is being investigated by the detective services and the Divisional Commissioner of Detective Services, Lieutenant General Ngomo, continues to follow up on the team that is doing the investigation. So it is not with DPCI, it remains with the detectives. there is a team that is dedicated to investigate the matter. Honorable Chair, I think General Matakata spoke to the handing over. There could not have been a handing over, as I said earlier, at an opportune moment all those processes will be conducted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end of this session of our interaction with SAPS. I think there's maybe just two issues for going forward. Of course, we will take note of the input from the members in terms of the conclusion of our resolutions, but in terms of the SAPS Act, one issue that the DPCI must still attend to, and I think is the issue of the regulations. That's still outstanding, and I think in this short term until June, we maybe want to have a further engagement on this and other issues as well, but I think the regulations should be prioritized going forward, because they will also ensure that in terms of procedure, protocol, investigating cases, that there is clarity. This morning's discussion on the one hand also showed from members there is not. So I think the regulations in terms of the exact processes will contribute to that. So I think maybe Section 17 of the SAPS Act, that we need to address all the outstanding issues. That's still for this committee to consider the salary scales of the head and the deputy head. That must still go to the National Assembly. So that's still outstanding. So there's also some issues we must address as a committee, but we will do that going forward. Thank you very much, General Bathlane and your team, for the engagement this last 3 days. It was robust at some times, but it need to be. And I think we will then finalize the report in the coming week. And then we will see each other on the 23rd, I think, of May with the budget vote. We will also address the broader issues. So we will now immediately then, we'll give 2 minutes for SAPS to vacate their seats, and then we'll ask the Secretariat of Police to come up to give their presentation. Thank you.
Chief Director for Inter-Sectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. He started on the 10th of April. And the rest of the people are not new to members. At the far right, it's Mr. Takalani Ramaru, who is the Chief Director, Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation. And next to Mr. Ntuli, it's Mr. Mueketsi Mashibini, who is the Chief Director, Corporate Services. Next to him, it's Advocate Don Bell, who is the Chief Director, Legislation. And we also have next to her, Ms. Bilkis Omar, who is the Chief Director, Policy and Research. Next to me, it's the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Tumelo Nkonjwana. And on the right-hand side is the Director of Strategic Planning, Mr. Willem Basson. I'm also accompanied by our Parliamentary and Liaison Officer, Mr. Samson Mahote.
Much, Secretary. Let's give the members an opportunity to introduce themselves. Bailey, we can start on your side.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning still to the Secretary and his team, Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Well, morning. My name is Philip Nchangwe, a member of the committee.
Morning, Leonard Ramatakan is my name, member of the committee.
Machero Nilangazin and Mabija Libuhan, member of the committee.
Morning, Pindile Mola, a member of the committee.
Right, thank you very much. Let's start with the presentation. Mr. Epia, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Our presentation, the outline of the presentation, it will give you an introduction just to give the context in terms of what the Civilian Secretariat does. Then we'll also give a highlight on the strategic plan, because when we submitted our APP, we also submitted a revised strategic plan 2015-2020. Then we will have a presentation on the programs and sub-programs, and each of the responsible managers will actually take us through their programs and sub-programs. Then I will deal with the minister's priorities, because when minister was appointed end of March, we spent time with him first. We developed the 100 days program, and then we spent 2 days with him looking into his priorities. That was on the 21st and 22nd of April, and we continued with that work in his absence on Sunday, and then he also announced his priorities in the form of a program of action and a strategic plan. And I'll just take you through that, because it will have implication in terms of our APP. Then the CFO will take us through the finance management and how we are doing in terms of the audit findings. Just as an introduction, the purpose of the presentation is to provide an overview to the Portfolio Committee on Police on our revised strategic plan priorities 2015-2020, the 2017-18 annual performance plan targets and budget of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service, and the minister's priorities 2017-19. Just to put our presentation in context, the Minister of Police directs, guides, and supervises, determines policy, doctrine, posture, and the standard for the South African Police Service. He also oversees the police performance, operation, and compliance to all the prescripts, and also especially compliance to our constitution. The Minister of Police does this work supported by us as the Civilian Secretariat, who are responsible to draft policies as directed by him or her, the minister. We also provide credible research, policy reviews, and impact studies, and provide the minister with informed and considered advice and capacity to oversee the police. And the issue about capacity to oversee the police is one issue that the minister emphasized when we met with him, to say he believes that we are his backbone. He cannot do anything, he cannot oversee the police without the Civilian Secretariat. Then on the right-hand side, the South African Police Service, it's directly accountable to the minister as it delivers on its legislative mandate by implementing policy and ministerial directions in accordance with the agreed regulations, standard operating procedures, national instructions, and the articulated operational values. The next slide, we just indicate that our role as the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service is to ensure that the citizens of the Republic of South Africa has the police service they deserve, which is outlined in the constitution of our country. We provide progressive policy and legislative regime that informs appropriate national instructions and standard operating procedures. So it's important to indicate that the national instructions that come from the police shouldn't be done outside the policies that we develop. We monitor, evaluate, guide, and also learn from policy implementation and impact. We provide credible evidence-based research that informs and directs decision-making, and we establish, nurtures, and maintain partnerships with stakeholders, role players, and critical institutions, both private and public. And by doing that, we empower the minister to determine the doctrine, posture, standard, and the operational values of the police. In terms of the strategic plan document that we revised, the strategic plan for the Civilian Secretariat for Police was reviewed due to the following: the approval by Cabinet of the White Paper on Policing and the White Paper on Safety and Security in April 2016. The recommendation of the Falam Commission of Inquiry. And for instance, I just want to highlight some of the issues that gives additional responsibilities to the department, which will be of importance why the strategy has to be reviewed. A strategy for monitoring the entities reporting to the Minister of Police, as well as strategic forecasting and envisioning for the ministry. Because now we have even in terms of the white paper, we need to assist the minister to monitor all the entities that reports to him. And we also have to assist the minister to provide the strategic direction for the ministry as a whole, not only looking into the civilian secretariat. Other responsibilities that are outlined in the white paper include the knowledge management, which incorporates proper packaging and management of knowledge for the Ministry of Police, the oversight role on SAPS, on contract management, financial and institutional analysis, amongst others, which will require the department to enhance its skills and capacity, the administrative support to the minister, and coordination of the integrated justice system and the SEPS transformation process. And to ensure that the Civilian Secretariat is able to conduct its job effectively, the following focus areas have been prioritized for the years 2017-18 to 2019-20 period. The repositioning of the Civilian Secretariat for Police as a new Department of Police, which will require a new organizational structure, and it's something that we are busy with. Organizational renewal and strategic leadership, and the enforcement of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service Act. And when I take the honorable members through the minister's strategy and the priorities, you will see how that pans out. Repositioning the Civilian Secretariat for Police as the primary policy advisor to the minister. Strengthening the capacity of the secretariat to influence international development for the Ministry of Police and facilitate the creation of a technological policing environment. Strengthening the heads of departments forum, the senior management forum, in order to monitor progress of departments' oversight function. So the heads of departments forum, it's the heads of departments of community safety at provinces, and the senior management forum is the provincial secretariat. We also need to establish self-directed project teams in order to give effect to the implementation of the plans. And it's one issue that we've identified, that when it comes to project management, we are a little bit wanting.
the development of coherent partnership, marketing and communication strategy to strengthen engagement with key stakeholders and galvanizing communities on crime prevention initiatives. Building a strong information communication technology infrastructure for the department and development of integrated human resource strategy. And when it comes to the issue about the ICT infrastructure, currently one of the challenges that we have is that we are sitting in a building that we are on a month-to-month basis. Our contract is that it's a month-to-month payment because we are overcrowded in the place, and we need to move to another building, and it's an issue that I think it's delaying us to make sure that we have a proper ICT infrastructure. I think with that introduction, and I will come back when I deal with the issue of the minister's priorities or the minister's program of action, but I will hand over to Mr. Mashibini to just take us through program one, and all the other chief directors will take us through their respective programs. Thanks.
Rapia, welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon once again, honorable members. From my presentation, out of these four programs, I am going to present the first program, which is administration. In terms of its purpose, it provides administrative support, strategic leadership, and management for the department. The strategic objectives, our objective is to enhance corporate governance in ensuring that the secretariat achieves its mandate. The following are the four sub-programs which are falling under this program, namely departmental management, corporate services, finance, and internal audit. With regard to departmental management, Chairperson, the purpose is to provide strategic support to the Secretary of Police, and its strategic objective is to provide leadership, strategic management, and direction to the Secretariat. The following areas have been prioritized under this sub-program, namely effective planning in the Secretariat in terms of its strategic plan, annual performance plans, annual reporting, performance planning, and quarterly reporting. Secondly, the effective cooperation between IPIT and the Secretariat, which culminates into a joint consultative forum. The second sub-program, Chairperson, is corporate services, where the purpose is to provide reliable and efficient corporate services to the civilian secretariat, and the strategic objective is to provide effective and sufficient corporate service to the civilian secretariat to enable the achievement of its oversight mandate through communication, information technology, human resources, and auxiliary services. The following areas have been prioritized within these APPs: the approval of the workplace skills plan, the approval of the corporate governance of ICT framework, and the reduction of vacancy rate to 10% of the total establishment. The next slide, Chairperson, is about the salary levels with regard to each business unit. In terms of this slide, one would see that on the left side of the slide is your different business units, and on top there are the different salary levels which are within the organization. On your right side, extreme right, is your vacancy rate, and the second column from the right is your total in terms of each salary level. So starting from, for an example, the secretary of office, secretary's office, one would see that between your salary 1 to 6, there is one official. Between salary level 7 to 8, two officials. Salary 9 to 10, two officials. Salary level 11 to 12, two officials. And from 13, 14, 15 is your SMS, your senior managers. where you're 13, you've got 4 in the office of the Secretary of Police. You've got 1, which is the secretary himself. This make a total of 12, and there's only 1 vacancy in that unit. Within finance, the total number of officials per salary unit is 19, and the vacancies are 8. Corporate services is 25, and vacancies is 5. Intersectoral coordination and strategic partnerships, the total is 22, and there are no vacancies. Your civilian oversight and monitoring and evaluation, the total is 19, and there are 8 vacancies. Your policy development and research, the total is 14, and there's 1 vacancy. Legislation, the total is 4, and there's 1 vacancy. This following units, your DNA and DPCA judge, have been added on our establishment since they fall within our administrative program. DNA, it has a total of 1, and it has a vacancy of 3. The DPCI judge, it has a total of 8, and there are no vacancies. And the total field, as it was when we submitted this information towards the end of April, it was 124. And your vacancies per salary level, it is now, it was 27, and currently I'm told it is 25 because there are 2 appointments which took place. The next slide, Chairperson, is just about the narrative in terms of our employment profile. The total approved post-establishment has increased. Honorable members will recall that when we were here last year in October, our approved post-establishment was 107. Now, this has increased from 107 to 151 after the minister approved 44 posts which were added on our establishment. So from last year in October to today, we have increased our establishment from 107 251. The staff complement as it stands today, Chairperson, is 124 as a result of this additional post. And last year, before this additional post, we had 95 posts, and like as I've indicated, they've been increased. I mean, we had 95 warm bodies in the organization, and they have now been increased to 124. The total current vacancy, it is 27, and if one recalls that last year our vacancy was 12, so it has also been increased, our vacancy, as a result of that. Our current vacancy rate is 18%, and if one recalls last year it was 11%. So as a result of this additional post, it was increased from 11%. To 17% as it stands. The annual vacancy rate performance target, one would see there under that heading that we've got 4 quarters, and that is our strategic commitment in order to fill all these positions. We committed that, we set ourselves a target that during the first quarter, which is April to June, we would decrease our vacancy rate by 20%. By the second quarter, it would be 15%. Third quarter, it would be 12%. And fourth quarter, it will be 10%. Now, if you look at the actual performance as it stands currently, Chair, we are currently having 18% in our vacancy rate. Our plan is that by the second quarter, we would have filled 11 posts. I need to indicate to honorable members that we have already interviewed all these 11 candidates, and we are awaiting, or in fact the process of job evaluation has been finalized. So by the end of this month, we expect to appoint them. By the second quarter, our commitment is to fill 10 posts of this target, and the third quarter to fill 5 posts we should be left out of this total of 27. The next slide, Chairperson, is about the employment equity in terms of the organization as it stands, where 92% of our staff members is Africans. 3% is Indians, 2% is colored, and 3% is white. Breaking it down in terms of gender, Chairperson, one would see that in terms of our males, African, we've got 92%. Males, Indians, we've got 2%. Males, colored, we've got 3%. And males, white, 3%. In terms of females, Chairperson, 24% of them are your Africans, 3% are Indians, 1% is colored, and 2% is white. The next slide is about the narrative, just to support the graphs that have been provided, where we are indicating that with this total of 124 warm bodies, 63 of them are females, which translates to 51%, and 61 of them are males, which translates to 49%. In terms of our demographic representations, Chairperson, as it is common cause that the departments have to strive towards 50% of women representation at SMS level. The departmental status currently is standing at 33% in terms of women, and we've got a variance of 16.6%. The disabled, the target is 2%, and currently we are still being challenged by the building, as the Secretary has already indicated. The building is not user-friendly for physically disabled employees. But because we are in the process of relocating to the new offices, this target would be addressed. In terms of representation by Africans, the target is 87%, but we have exceeded this target by 5%, because as one can see from the figures there, we are standing at 92%. So it goes without saying, Chairperson, that our strategy in order to address this problem is to accelerate the appointment of the previously disadvantaged, firstly in terms of women at SMS level, and also to look at other racial groups so that we can also have a balance in terms of the distribution of various racial groups. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we go to the next program?
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. Program 2 speaks to intersectoral coordination strategic partnerships. Its purpose is to manage and encourage national dialogue on community safety and crime prevention. The strategic objective is to contribute towards creating a safe and secure environment through partnerships with stakeholders. It composes of four programs, sub-programs. That's intergovernmental, civil society, public-private partnerships, and community outreach. The performance indicators are as follows. For MOUs with stakeholders to build safer communities, for the period of 2017 to 2018, we are looking at two MOUs. The one must be achieved in the second quarter and the other one in the third quarter. The anti-crime campaigns were looking at three, of which one must be in the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. The CPF training programs were looking at one, and that one is on the second quarter. The monitoring and implementation of CSFs, your community safety forums, were looking at 20 that was spreading on each quarter, the four quarters. And the monitoring implementation of CPF guidelines were looking at 9 that will be distributed as, that is throughout the all what you call quarters. The provincial capacity building sessions on crime prevention were looking at 9 that 2 will be in the first quarter, then the second, the third, and 1 on the fourth. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I will introduce Program 3, which is legislation and policy development, but I'll speak specifically to Program 3.1, which is policy development and research. So the purpose of the program legislation and policy development is to develop policy and legislation for the police sector and to conduct research on policing and crime. The strategic objective is constitutionally compliant legislation, research, and evidence-led policies for policing and safety. And the sub-programs, as I mentioned, are policy development and research, which is sub-program 3.1, and then legislation, which Ms. Advocate Dow will speak to. In terms of sub-program 3.1, our purpose is to develop policies and undertake research in areas of policing and crime. And the strategic objective is to provide evidence-based research and evidence-led policies on policing, crime, and safety to the Minister of Police. In terms of our targets for the year, we've got two performance indicators. One is number of policies on policing submitted to the Minister for approval per year. And under the policies, we have the National Policing Board Framework. Chair, we already have a discussion document on the National Policing Board policy, which we are going to further consult on and finalize in the second quarter of this year. So we've got a good document on that. On the conceptualizes the establishment of the board. The second one is a single police service framework. We also have a discussion document on that. It maps out a process for implementing the single police service, and it essentially geared towards ensuring better synergy between SAPS and Metro Police Services. And then the third policy is a finalized policy, CPF policy of community police forums, which looks at issues of location as per the policy shift in the white paper on policing, which locates CPS under the provincial secretariats and the civilian secretariat for police. We're looking at a funding model as well in this, apart from the location. In terms of the other indicator on number of research reports on policing approved by the secretary, we have two. Chair, if you would recall last year, you asked Minister Nhleko about the state of policing, so we've heeded your request, and we are conducting a study on the state of policing. And the objective is to assess the state of policing in line with democratic policing principles. So we're looking at the Constitution, the objects of the police in the Constitution, and measuring that against where we are.
At that point, during our study too, we also got a copy, I don't know, with the UK's approach to it. So I think it will be worthwhile also looking at other jurisdictions.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, but we can speak about that later.
Thank you. And then we're also conducting with our provincial secretariats in the provinces a study on demilitarization, focusing on visible policing. If you recall, we had done something on public order policing and tactical response teams, and one of the honorable members asked us last year sometime, why didn't we focus on police stations? So for this year, we're focusing on police stations. And in that, we want to look at the ranks, weaponry, communication, the hierarchical structure, and discretion and accountability. As we speak today, though, our offices, the provinces and us and my office are sitting and conceptualizing the methodology for the study. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. Good afternoon, Secretary. Good afternoon, colleagues. The purpose of the legislation program is to provide legislative support to the minister. The strategic objective is effective policing, legislation and legal advice and support to the minister. The performance indicators are the number of bills submitted to the minister for approval per year to proceed to cabinet. So the quarterly targets for this financial year are as follows. There's no bills for the first quarter, two for the second quarter, one for the third quarter, and one for the fourth quarter. Now, if I may be permitted, Chair, just to give a bit of background to these bills. All these bills were on the 16-17 annual performance plan. However, during the course of the year, all departments were requested to reprioritize and to reduce the number of legislation programs. Firstly, by the Presidency to accommodate the local government elections, and then secondly, by the Secretary to Cabinet, were requested that time frames for the submission of bills to Cabinet and then to Parliament must be accommodated. And then having regard to all these processes that we were required to follow, it was concluded that the legislative program proposed for 16-17 was unrealistic, and as such the proposed bills would not be introduced in Parliament on the dates suggested. It therefore became necessary to revise the 2016-17 legislative program to carry over these bills into this financial year. So then the program of action to introduce the bills, which is aligned to what the Secretary will talk on later on, the Minister's priorities, involves the following. And I'll just give an update also on the status of the bills. The Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. This bill has already been approved by Cabinet for introduction to Parliament, subject to certain conditions. And those conditions, they were mainly two. The one was that the conclusion of the National Economic Development and Labour Council, that is NEDLAC, process on the bill must be concluded. And just to report that this process is at an advanced stage. The NEDLAC report is expected on or around the 18th of May. And then the second condition was that consultations must be held with the Office of the President, State Security Agency, and the Department of Communications. These processes have already been undertaken, and we have already received a report from the Department of Communication, and we are awaiting the one from the Presidency and the State Security Agency for their comments so that we can address them and then provide that report to the Minister for his approval so this bill comes back to Cabinet and for introduction. Then in terms of the Firearms Control Amendment Act, the amendment bill in its technical format responds to the policy to strengthen the legal regime on firearms and restricts the number of firearms that may be issued to an applicant. This process is in its final stages before submission to the Minister for approval. The bill will be ready for submission to the Minister for consideration and approval by the 31st of May 2017. We are also in the process of preparing the preliminary socio-economic impact assessment system report and the Cabinet Memorandum. The Minister will submit the bill to Cabinet for approval for a decision whether the bill should be published for comment before introduction to Parliament by the end of September 2017. And this is because of the changes that have been made to this bill. They are substantive, and as such, we require direction from Cabinet as to whether or not this bill should be published for comment again. Then the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act Amendment Bill. This bill is being drafted in conjunction with IPED, with the drafting team from IPED. There has been a meeting that was already held, but we will continue with constructive engagement with IPED in the next few weeks. The bill will be submitted to the Minister for consideration and approval by the end of October before it is submitted to Cabinet. Then in terms of the Animal Movement Bill, this bill has already, we are in the process of finalizing this bill, and we just need to consult with identified communities and stakeholders on this amendment bill. The bill will be submitted to the minister on or before the end of the fourth quarter 2017-2018 for consideration and approval for submission to cabinet for consideration. And that brings me to the end of my presentation.
Just one before Mr. Ramaru comes in to make a correction. The critical infrastructure protection bill, it's not going to go back to cabinet. Cabinet has approved and said sort out all these things, and the minister will just have to tell them that all the things that have been raised have been addressed. Now the bill has been introduced to parliament, so it won't go back to cabinet. The issue of the firearms control amendment bill, last time we were at the portfolio committee, there was an issue regarding publishing that, and we got an instruction from the portfolio committee that the most preferred way to do this thing is we should publish it before it comes here. So I was the only law and voice to say we don't have to publish. So there's consensus now that our recommendation to cabinet will be publish it first, because it's a radical shift from what we had initially. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm presenting on Program 4, which is the Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation. The purpose of this program is to oversee, monitor and report on the performance of the South African Police Service. Our strategic objective is to provide effective oversight, monitoring and evaluation that contributes towards an accountable and transformed police service. We have two sub-programs. One is the Police Performance, Conduct and Compliance Monitoring. The second one is Police and Program Evaluations. Then in terms of the performance indicators for the current financial year, we have about 13, 9 belonging to the first sub-program and 4 to the second sub-program. The first indicator is oversight visits to police stations, where we have planned to do 22 distributed across the four quarters of the year. The second one is the Police Station Service Delivery Trends Analysis Report. This one we do, actually there are two, one for the second quarter and the second one for the fourth quarter. So this one we do with the assistance of the provincial secretariats. The third one is the SAPS Budget and Program Assessment Report, which we do one. This is based on the performance of the SAPS, in particular focusing at the minister's priorities and directives. The fourth one is the assessment reports on complaints management. So we receive complaints, but over and above that, we also assess the capacity of SAPS to receive and deal with complaints as per the CSPS Act. Then we also have a target on the report on SAPS implementation of IPIT recommendations produced. IPIT gives recommendations to SAPS, so it's our role to monitor whether those recommendations are being implemented, and we produce one report thereof. Then there is a report on the DVA non-compliance, exploring causes and possible remedies. Honorable Chairperson, you will recall that we have been reporting that SAPS is not fully complying in terms of the implementation of the DVA. So we have, for this financial year, we're going to do a study to try and find out why are they not complying with the Act as they're supposed to do. The next one will be compliance monitoring reports related to Domestic Violence Act. We will have two, quarter one and also quarter three. Then we'll also have a report on the implementation and compliance to legislation. For the current financial year, we're going to look at the Trafficking in Persons Act. The next one will be the monitoring reports on police stations' implementation of the school safety protocol, where we target to do two reports, one in quarter two and then on quarter four. Then we're going to do customer satisfaction survey, which is an opinion survey in terms of how the public or the citizens perceive the service delivery of SAPS. We will do one report in quarter four. Then we will have an evaluation report on the relevance and effectiveness of the oversight initiatives. We will be looking back at all the initiatives that have been done since we came into existence to see if we are being effective in
addressing the challenges that SAPS has. The next one is the report on community safety forums. We are going to do to assess the functionality, and we will have a report in the fourth quarter. Similar to that, we are going to have a report on the establishment and the functionality of the community police forums. So the report will also be done and presented in the third quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The next part is just to indicate the priorities. The last issue will be saying after we have put in our plan, do we have the money to deal with it? But for now, we just want to address all the priorities that are before us. As I've already indicated, we had a meeting with the minister first. It was the end of our meeting, which ended up in a meeting where we developed the 100 days, the first 100 days program for the minister. And then the second one was we went on a strategic planning session with the minister and the deputy minister. The minister was accompanied by the senior managers in his office, and we had all our senior managers from the civilian secretariat. And there were three presentations that were made. One, the minister outlined the mandate that has been given by the president in terms of the next 2 years in this position. And he requested us to make a presentation in what we called the state of policing. And we used all the oversight reports that we have done in the past to brief the minister to say this is our understanding of the state of policing currently. And it's not the state of policing as we say we are going to do it. It was based on accumulation of all the reports that we have done. And there was a presentation from SAPS on the back to basics program that was presented. And based on that, we formulated a strategic plan and the program of action for the minister for the next 2 years. And what I am presenting, and it's a detailed program that was developed, and if members want it, I think the minister might be keen to share it with the portfolio committee. In terms of the policy implementation or policy development, the first priority is that the development of an implementation plan and rollout of the White Paper on Policing and White Paper on Safety and Security 2016, that must be done. Ensure the improvement of the quality and functioning of the South African Police Service, Detective Service. And this came out as the report that we indicated that we developed a strategy in partnership with the police. We developed the policy on Detective Service, and based on that, our recommendation was that that this needs to be implemented to ensure that there is proper work in terms of detective services. Ensure proper coordination and collaboration by all existing structures to solve serial rapes and murders in a consistent manner. There is a policy that we developed, which it's called the Serial Rapes Investigation and Management. And in that report, it clearly indicates that there is a gap. There's no coordination amongst the units that must work together. Each one of the units is working on its own. And for us to make sure that we are successful in dealing with this, we will need to ensure that proper coordination. rooting out gangsterism through the implementation of the anti-gang strategy approved by Cabinet. There's an anti-gang strategy that has been approved by Cabinet, and that will be another priority. And it's the work that we have done in partnership with NICOC and other departments. Approval of the use of force policy to provide all members of SAPS with clear and consistent guidelines regarding the use of force in the discharge of their duties. There's a policy that we developed, and we submitted that to SAPS for implementation, and they still discussion in terms of their inputs on it, but Minister would like that to be implemented. The finalization and approval of a policy on removing barriers to reporting on sexual offenses and domestic violence is a policy that we developed, which need to be implemented. And if this policy is implemented, it will also assist us in making sure that our work on the monitoring of the Domestic Violence Act is actually in enhanced. The public discourse and consultation on the initiative to establish the single police service guided by the draft discussion document should also ensue. There is a discussion document that we have developed which looks into the low-hanging fruits which we can implement immediately, and also long-term issues that we can look into because the governing party has made this as its resolution and a priority for us to enhance the fight against crime, to ensure that there is coordination and proper integration with the municipal and metro police. And this discourse will happen, and at the end, I'm sure we will find a solution to say how are we implementing the issue of the single police service. The development of the e-policing policy that will guide the South African Police Service on the use of technology to fight crime. we have, through our assessment, come to a conclusion that the issue of saying the police must just get additional members, is not going to assist because the purse is shrinking every year. National Treasury is not going to provide more money. But if we use technology, we can actually complement the limited resources that we have and improve our effectiveness. Then on the legislation program, and Advocate Bell has already spoken about it, bills to be introduced to Parliament, 17-18, the Minister is saying the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill must be introduced, and we have already indicated that Cabinet has already approved the bill for processing to Parliament. The Firearms Control Amendment Bill, and Minister was very clear to say he wants to silence the guns. He wants to silence the guns, and you will see some of this operation in this 100 days program, that he will be out there to deal with these issues. And the bill, the amendment bill, will actually assist us in making sure that he silences the guns. The Independent Police Investigative Directorate Amendment Bill, we also want to make sure that it's introduced in this financial year. The bills to be introduced in Parliament 2018-19 will be the Animal Movement and Animal Produce Bill, the South African Police Service Amendment Bill, the Protection of Constitutional Democracy and Terrorist-Related Matters Amendments Bill. And we are putting that in to say maybe by that time the courts would have addressed the challenges that have been brought by Mr. Oka from Nigeria, because the bill has been drafted. It's there, just ready to say let it be processed. But if you process it without those issues clarified, we might find that we are sent back. On crime prevention and support to SEPs back to basics, the priorities that ministers has put in for the next 2 years is to ensure that specialized units trained in medium to high risk operations do not get involved in frontline policing. In our research that we did in terms of the demilitarization of police, focusing on the POP and the tactical response team, we find that the TRT is being utilized to deal with crime. And that in itself raises the perception that the police are actually militarized, because these are highly skilled people that must be used in situations like where there's hostage or where there's cash in transit heist. But they are starting to use them there, and Minister is saying this should be a priority to make sure that that doesn't happen. Ensure that SAPS visible policing is strengthened and sufficiently resourced to deal with citizens and not use the TRT to augment capacity, which I think is linked to the one that I've stated above. The implementation of the recommendations of the panel of experts established as a result of the Falam recommendations, and honorable members will be aware that the previous minister appointed a panel of experts that is busy addressing those issues that have been raised by the Falam Commission recommendation. Ensure the shifting of administrative responsibilities from SAPS Act members, employees, to members who are employed in terms of the Public Service Act. One of the research that we did identified that only 43% of the SAPS Act members are actually in the forefront dealing with crime. The rest, which is 57%, is actually used in administration work. And in my previous work, when the police were looking for increase in salaries, the main motivation was that we are going to have more people on the street to fight crime, and then you release them from administrative work. But it seems like that motivation was just for getting the salaries, but these people are still there, stamping documents for people and sitting doing administration, and that issue needs to be addressed. Assess the capacity and functionality of the 10111 call center and enhance their functionality. Also, a study on the economics of policing and economics of crime must also be undertaken during this period. The development and implementation of SAPS fleet management turnaround strategy, which when we did our oversight, we found that cars, they sit in garages for maintenance, and in some cases in rural areas, you find that the police are using sedans, not vehicles that are appropriately suitable for those terrains. The development and implementation of, ensure the full resourcing of the forensic science laboratories to ensure effective and efficient services. What we have found is that we only have 4 forensic laboratories throughout the country, and not all of them are fully resourced, and it's a priority for the minister to make sure that that is fully resourced. Further priorities under the prevention, crime prevention and support to back to basics, it's the development of the cyber crime regulations, but these regulations will be relating to policing within 6 months of the Cybercrime Act coming into operation. And the assumption here is that the Act will be enacted before the end of the minister's term. Ensure that the remaining 2010 amnesty firearms are destroyed. In our oversight work, we find that there are some 2010 Amnesty firearms that are sitting in police stations that haven't been destroyed, and that needs to happen within this period. Ensure that the turnaround strategy for the central firearms registry is implemented. The strategy was done some time ago, but coupled with further research that we did, now we are able to ensure that that happens. Ensure that a fully resourced employee health and wellness program should be established at cluster level. Our oversight role finds that the employee health and wellness program, it's only found at provincial and national level, and at the cluster or local level, you don't find that, and it becomes a problem. The development and implementation of a comprehensive partnership strategy to mobilize role players and stakeholders to strengthen service delivery by the police service and to ensure the safety and security of communities. I think it's one of the issues that we haven't done. The Civilian Secretariat for Police Service makes provision for us to implement the partnership strategy, and we haven't developed that strategy, and that strategy will have to be developed this financial year. Identifying and concluding memorandum of agreements with strategic stakeholders in a fight against crime. Furthermore, enhancing stakeholders and community participation in safety and crime prevention programs through Izimbizo, working groups, community safety forums, and community policing forums. Organizing and facilitating provincial and national dialogue conferences to deliberate on combating crime and making our community safer. Strengthening school safety committees and forums to curb crime and violence, and also to establish safety committees at institutions of higher learning to curb crime and violence. This will include dealing with issues of sexual offenses at institutions of higher learning, but also including violent protests that have now become a character of institutions of higher learning. Assess and monitor trends in litigation and remedial measures to reduce systemic causes that lead to litigation. The SAPS annual report 2015-16, it says that the contingent liability in terms of the litigation is sitting at 14.672 billion. And we need to look into that to make sure, because if all those claims that people are saying, which is as a result of the police conduct, come to fruition, that a lot of money will go, will be diverted from fighting crime and paying the complainants. The development and implementation of a sustainable and multidisciplinary strategy to address the problem relating to involvement of youth in crime. Enhance existing community volunteer programs against crime and or conceptualize additional volunteer programs, including the police reservists. Support the Minister's Selfless Service and Bravery Awards. It will be enhancing what is currently there, because SAPS has got the annual awards that they give to men and women who have done sterling work, but the minister would like to enhance that and also have on the sports awards that must be given at local police station level and local area level. Visits to crime hotspots by the minister and the deputy minister, and assessment and intervention in poor performing police stations. All these priorities in the program of action of the minister might mean that we could have to come back to Parliament with an amendment to our APP. We are still busy working on that, because some of the issues that minister has prioritized are not necessarily in our APP, and also it might be also in the SAPS APP, maybe there might be need for them to adjust. So there could be an addendum for our APP to address this. We haven't finalized that. The different units are looking into their APP and see where that adjustment will happen. I'll now hand over to the CFO.
Thank you, Secretary. I think let us take half an hour lunch break, members. You've been on the road for a long time. So let's give you opportunity until 1:30. We reconvene, then we'll give the Secretariat 10 minutes to address the rest of the presentation. Because we've heard now the minister's speech, and then we will go to questions because we must still deal with IPED as well this afternoon. Thank you very much.